stop swearing. Guess what? The more he did. So two versions, one you can hear on the wireless, and one I'll tell you how you can get elsewhere. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
So a director's cut, effectively.
There will be the director's cut, exactly right.
thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. Extraordinary scenes overnight in Caerphilly, which we will have a little look at in the course of the programme. Perhaps not quite as significant in some ways as the initial result would allow, but it is, however you dice it, absolutely appalling news for the governing party. And it is to the governing party that we turn our attention first this morning. Rachel Reeves is considering raising income tax to help eliminate a multi-million pound black hole, sources have told one newspaper. And of course it is in direct contravention of one of those, I think, increasingly stupid looking pledges that she made, before becoming Chancellor.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Plaid Cymru are celebrating a Senate by-election win in Caerphilly, breaking Labour's 100-year hold on the area. They finished on 47% of the vote, ahead of Reform UK on 36%, and Labour on just 11%. Only 2% of voters backed the Conservatives. LBC's political correspondent Aggie Chambray says it could lead to a redrawing of the electoral map.
It's absolutely astonishing. And when I was speaking to people too in Wales, one of them was suggesting they think that we are heading towards a more kind of European style of governing, where there are basically lots of small parties in a coalition. And that is the way they think things will go. And looking at this result, it looks like Plaid Cymru would win the Senate, and they would have their first minister in Welsh Parliament. But I think big questions for Keir Starmer, but absolutely huge questions too for Kemi Badenoch.
The Plaid leader, Rhun ap Iorwerth, says the win marks a reset for Welsh politics. So Keir Starmer is to urge allies of Ukraine to step up Kiev's supply of long-range weapons. A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing will be held in London later. Ukraine's leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, is expected to be among the leaders taking part in those talks. Rachel Reeves is reportedly looking at raising income tax in the budget next month. It's understood the Chancellor's considering a breach of a key manifesto pledge to reduce a multi-billion pound shortfall. President Trump has fallen out with Canada again, calling off all trade negotiations. He pulled out of the talks after the Ontario government started running a TV advert in the US to make the case against tariffs. And NatWest has reported a 30% increase in earnings between July and September. The group, which also includes RBS and Ulster Bank, reported a pre-tax profit of £2.2 billion for the quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 2 points at 95.76. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Tesco finest sourdough. The real breadwinner. Untoasted, really toasted. Or buttered right to the edges. Whatever floats your toast, it's delicious either way. It's why only the finest bakers take 24 hours to carefully craft our sourdough. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. How much attention do you pay to what things used to be like? Not in a kind of in my day-itis kind of way. Well, everything was better in my day. We all do that as we get older, I think, sometimes. It's quite important to guard against it. But I don't think that we pay... We look forward mostly, don't we? We're like sharks. We're moving forward most of the time, rather than looking back. Well, actually, that's not true either, is it? If you think of the political movements at the moment that are based upon nostalgia for a non-existent England past. But I mention that because I don't know whether it's always been like this. I've been really puzzling over one very simple question now for the best part of a year. And it's this. It's how do we end up in a place where everybody acknowledges that we have got financial problems as a country? You can, listen, even for the purposes of today's programme, you can pretend that they had nothing to do with Brexit if you want, but yeah, that's not the point today. Everybody knows that, A, we have got too much debt, although there's some mildly good news on that front that I'll share with you shortly, and B, austerity has been an unmitigated disaster, and we need a lot more money in all sorts of areas of the country. I don't know how anyone disagrees with that. And yet, you know, calls for cuts still run through the Conservative Party like Blackpool through a stick of rock. Farage's outfit, elected to various councils with promises to cut costs and to cut this and to cut that, and then, of course, arriving there and being hit over the head by reality and announcing that they're almost certainly going to have to introduce the maximum 5% council rate rises next year. So unless you're a liar or an idiot, you recognise, maybe there's another category there, if I've been unfair and you want to add somebody else to that list. So if you're a liar or an idiot or an other, you know that the government needs more money to spend on the things that you want the government to spend on. And yes, of course, you can also look at waste, although there isn't as much as everybody tells you there is, which is, of course, the story of the reform councils. Getting elected by telling lies or just being a bit stupid on questions of waste and then getting into power and realising that there is no fat left to trim. And yet everybody still thinks that we need to find more money to spend on new stuff. Everything. I don't know, what's your particular bugbear? I don't know that I'm ever more middle-aged than when I start thinking about potholes. There is something about potholes that drives me absolutely, pardon the pun, potty. It really does. It just seems to me to speak of a malaise that goes much wider. I'm not even a motorist, particularly. You know, I'm not a petrol head by any stretch of the imagination. But potholes, I mean, even if you're not driving over them, they just look awful. And that is a really good example of, I'd say it was an example of the public spending equivalent of the kind of, what did they call it in New York when they had that theory that if you had a broken window in an area, then it was more likely to become, it wasn't the broken window theory, Keith. Get out. Seriously, go and stand in the corner. It had something else. It may even have been under Giuliani before he went mad. And his sort of face started melting. The idea that a broken window will increase the likelihood of graffiti, and graffiti will increase the likelihood of litter not being picked up, and suddenly you're living in a part of town that is, I got zero tolerance somewhere in the back of my mind, but I don't think it was called that. But there's a public sector, there's a public spending equivalent of that, isn't there? And a pothole speaks of governance that is bankrupt. Or, at the very least, massively underfunded. We can't afford to fix the holes in the road. We're not fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering. We can't afford to do that. The broken window theory, it may actually have been called. So apologies to Keith, can come back out of the corner. And yet we are all adamant, or most of us are adamant, that we shouldn't be paying more tax. I find this absolutely fascinating. Do you know what I'd really like to do? It's Friday. It's been a long week. I'd like to stop talking now. There it is. There's your topic. We all want more money for the government. We all want the government to have more money to spend on the things that we want the government to spend money on, but we don't think we should be the ones providing it. Discuss. 0345 606 0973. How confident would I have to be just to put my feet up now and wait to see what you've got to say? But that's going to be the central thrust of what I'm asking you in 5, 6 minutes' time. Well, I'm asking you now, but I won't stop talking for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. That there's another element to this conversation as well, which I am going to perhaps personalise in a way I may later regret. But I don't think I'll be giving away any major confidences. So, what will happen if and when Rachel Reeves raises income tax? She shouldn't have promised that she wasn't going to. There's some argument about how much of a surprise the scale of the black hole left by the Conservatives actually was. I think that SNP politicians had pinpointed fairly accurately what the figure was likely to be before Labour went, oh, colour me shocked. We've got a £20 billion black hole to fill. And, of course, the people who are either liars or idiots or something else will pretend that it doesn't exist at all. And remember to suggest to me what the something else might be. But you can't not do it, it seems to me. This is what I mean about having been puzzling over it for a year. Oh, we're not going to raise this and we're not going to raise that. I think you've got to, haven't you? Who goes out? This is where we all become leaders of reform councils. Even if you are a liar or an idiot, once you get hit over the head with reality, you have to recognise reality. Okay, I mean, I appreciate this is a country that is still denying, or a third of the country is still denying reality with regards to Brexit, but we all know. Once you see the books in the case of these ludicrous councillors who are now biting chunks out of each other while Nigel Farage pretends it isn't happening, you see the books and you know we need more money. Whether it's councils who were elected on a promise to cut spending who are now going to increase it because there is no fat left to trim. That's what austerity did. Quite how people fail to notice that is beyond me. Everyone's got a favourite. Is shibboleth the right word to use here? I don't know. I should look it up before I say it out loud. So everyone's got a favourite thing they can say, well, why are we spending money on this? So if you're from the left, or a certain part of the left, you might say, why are we spending money on nuclear weapons? And if you're from a certain part of the right, you might say, why are we spending money on foreign aid? Spoiler alert, we're not really anymore. But even if we were, it would be a drop in the ocean of what is needed to fix stuff, to get stuff up and running. And if not through tax, then through what? Should we just, I don't know, stick a bunch on a horse, buy a load of scratch cards? What else can a Chancellor do if not ask you, or more likely me, or quite possibly both of us, for a bit more money? So I've got two very, very related but quite different questions for you, and that's the first. Reeves is, I think, going to raise income tax in November. She is certainly discussing it. The journalists that have written this story today, they know their onions. And they don't know what. But one source said Reeves was thinking of adding one pence to the basic rate, which would bring in about 8 billion quid. Of course, on the downside, you've got cost of living concerns that now run through almost every household in the country. And then you've got the thresholds. Over £125,000 a year, for example, is one of them. If you tinkered with these, if you changed these, you would be going after those with the broadest shoulders, which I approve of. But the second bit of the story that I've got for you today, this is from 4 days ago. You've seen variations on this statistic millions of times over the years. This is not an opinion. This is counting. The top 1% of UK taxpayers pay... I wanted to do a hook and tease on this, but I can't because I want you to tell me what you think about this. 33% of the total collected revenues. It's a freedom of information request to HMRC. The top 500,000 taxpayers contributed £93.8 billion in taxes in the 2023-2024 year. That's the top 1% being responsible for about a third of the total amount collected. That's through income tax and capital gains tax. And these statistics are usually touted by people who think it proves that people like me pay too much tax. That's it. That's the scoop. I'm in the 1%. Ooh, what a shock. I have colleagues who aren't, and they are more exercised by this than I am. This is another element that I find fascinating about taxation. I think that if you're in... I think it does two things. I think it gives people like me grounds to be extraordinarily proud of doing our patriotic duty. You know, if you are part of a relatively small cohort of citizens who bankroll an extraordinary proportion of the national pageant, then you should actually sleep really well in your bed at night. Unless you're making your money legally, that's all fine, isn't it? If you're not making it legally, you're not paying tax. I genuinely mean this. As a society, I don't understand why we don't play that game a little bit more. I'm not suggesting that everyone should queue up and say thank you to us on a regular basis, but it is something that I am inordinately proud of. You know, I've had great advantages in life and great privileges and some fat slices of luck and on occasions
Don't ask me exactly when, but on occasions I've worked very hard. And here I am in a position to contribute to an extraordinarily disproportionate slice of the national pie. It makes me very, very proud. Doesn't that make me weird? So I've got a couple of colleagues who are younger than me who think that it's grossly unfair. Whereas my argument would be, it means that the distribution of wealth is unfair. So someone who's not in the 1% said to me this morning, God, that's not fair. You lot shouldn't be paying that much. And I said, no, you should be paying more, but you'd need to earn more to pay it. So am I arguing for a pay cut for me so that you can... I don't know. I just find it emotionally fascinating as well as intellectually. Simon's been in touch to say, you don't bankroll me, you idiot. I think there's an application to have a look at someone's history of contributions to the programme. A little later, we shall find out. And that's it. I mean, there it is. The idea that some lefty could be actually bankrolling the lifestyle of people who like to blame immigrants for everything that's gone wrong in their own pitiful existences is perhaps part of the reason why we don't frame the story as generously as we might. So that's question number one. What about a raise in income tax? And I wonder whether your answer to that question is changed by the knowledge that the top 1% already pay 33% of the total collected. What does that say to you? I'm going to talk myself out of a topic now, aren't I? I'm going to jump off the Rachel Reeves one and go all in on the 1% paying the 33%. Let's try and do both. Let's try and keep both plates spinning if we can. I suppose in its simplest terms, I'm asking you, has Rachel Reeves got any choice? And how will you feel when she does it? 0345 6060 973. But I'm also really interested in what you think of the 1%. If you're in it, what you think of this fact. Am I an idiot for being rather proud of this, quotes, achievement, end quotes? And does it mean that we're more qualified to talk about what the Chancellor could or couldn't do in order to raise more money? If you're already part of the cohort that is bankrolling 33% of the country, does it mean that you're completely out of touch with everybody else's reality, or you are somehow more qualified to comment on what should be done to raise even more? So, number one, what's going to happen when she does it? Does she have any choice, and what's going to happen when she does it? Number two, what does this simple statistic say to you? That's all. 1% of UK taxpayers pay 33% of the total collected. It says to me there's something profoundly wrong with the distribution of wealth in this country, and it's possible I'm an idiot because I'm clearly a beneficiary of that unequal distribution. But it's also possible that we are being unfairly burdened and that Rachel Reeves should come out and make life a little bit easier for people at the top of the financial tree. And I'm nowhere near the top, by the way. I don't know where I sit in that 1%, but I'm nowhere near the top of it, that's for certain. It means that the system is the best it could possibly be, and that people in that 1% deserve a little bit more credit for doing what they do. That's it. That's your topic. That's your phone in. That's your Friday morning at 10. 0345 6060 973. Coming up a little later in the program, I am keen to talk to Simon Marks again, because he has been steering us through particularly choppy waters regarding US politics. I am drawn to tales of house building, which may be relevant to some of the topics that come up today. And I don't know if you've seen this story about obsessive compulsive disorder, but it's a timely moment to reflect upon how hideously misunderstood and misused that phrase is. A number of people, if I had a pound for everyone I've met who thinks that because they were once a bit stressed and they had to tidy up their sock drawer, they had OCD, then I'd be I'd be an even bigger contributor to the 33% of total taxes collected than I am already.
LBC.
I like my private details on a need-to-know basis. In other words, I need to know them, and you don't. That's why I use Bitdefender whenever I'm connected, working tirelessly in the background to protect me across all my devices, keeping my digital identity confidential, on the down low, on the hush-hush, trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
I wonder how surprised you are by the numbers. So, to be in the top 1% of income tax payers, and remember, you'd be paying income tax not just on earnings, you'd be paying on other incomes as well. What do you think, actually, genuinely, let's do this, before we get stuck into the conversation proper. Just take a moment. So there are two thresholds here, and they're not a million miles away from each other, but the minimum taxable income required to be in the top 1% of income taxpayers, I think, in your mind, it's much higher than reality. Just tell me what you think the threshold is to be in the top 1% of income taxpayers. In other words, what's the minimum taxable income? For the earners, it's a bit higher, but that doesn't really matter for our purposes, does it? The top 1% of income tax payers, the minimum income, the point at which you move into the top 1% is what? Have a guess. Don't cheat. Just have a guess and tell me what you think it is. How many thousands of pounds a year do you think you have to have in income to be in the 1% that currently pay 33% of the total collected? I can't wait to see what you say. It may be that I'm coming at it from a completely different angle. 21 after 10 is the time. Let's get the phones up. Steve's in Grimsby. Steve, what do you reckon?
James, I would imagine it's in excess of £200,000.
Yes and no. It wasn't the question I was asking you, actually. I should have said, why did you pick up the phone? So I don't want to give it away yet, because I'm building up a little bit of dramatic tension, Steve, and to be honest, you haven't helped.
Okay, James, I've spoken to you on a number of occasions. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy. He wrote this book called How They Broke Britain, and then he wrote
Sounds like an idiot. Sounds like an idiot.
And then How Not to Be Wrong. And then you have the audacity to get somebody like Gary Stevenson on his podcast, of Full Disclosure, who said that he'd bet on wealth inequality for the last 18 years and won.
Yes.
Who is this guy?
I mean, it's not the answer to all of the questions that I'm asking. The top of my head, I don't know where Gary stands on income tax increases, but I know where he stands on wealth taxes and capital gains tax increases. So is that the answer to the question of whether Rachel Reeves has any choice?
Sorry, James, I was being a bit facetious. I've got a lot. I think your program's fantastic, James. They have two choices. Any government, doesn't matter that if it's Rachel Reeves, whether it's Mel Stride, anybody, they've got two choices. You either get more money in taxation, and to be fair, the only way you're going to do that, and the top 1% are not going to like it, you have to tax the people who've got the most more, or you do what successive governments have done and Labour are trying to do, which is to cut back the welfare bill.
I don't think you can do that much more.
No, you absolutely can't, James. You're spot on. You're spot on. You can't do that.
But if you were in... Are you in the 1%?
Oh, good Lord, no, James.
But if you were, and you were listening to this programme, and you were surprised but not surprised to learn that you're part of the cohort that pays 33%... of the total spent by the government, 33% of all the money raised. So, of course, some of it's servicing debt. It still counts as being spent. You could say, I am already helping to pay 33%. How could you possibly come after me more?
James, I would be of the same volition that you are. I would be extremely proud. I'm retired, James. I've got a very small business, and I pay corporation tax, and I pay personal tax. I have no issue with that. And this year, I'll probably pay more corporation tax this year than I did last year. It's not a huge amount of money, but if we want all these services for the good of the population, how do we get it? And the only way you can get it is through taxation. And the only people you should be taxing, not the only people, the people who have to tax the most as those who've got the most money. When Gary was on your programme, he was talking about, I don't want to pick him out particularly, but he just used it as an example, that Rishi Sunak's passive income from his wealth is £500,000 a week. James, how rich do these people want to be?
But, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if you come after people like that, they'll all move to Dubai, I'm told.
Now, come on, he was on full disclosure with you, and what he said was, you don't tax wealth. You don't tax work, you tax wealth. If they've got
so it's the wealth here,
country,
even if you're moving to Dubai. You've got five houses here, we'll have a piece of that. Is it? I mean, I don't know where we sit internationally, whether or not our pyramid is inverted, whether or not we have looked after, it feels like as a country that we've looked after, we've prioritised wealth over everybody else forever, and the argument that if you stop doing it now, everything will get bad is a bit pointless when you look at how bad everything already is. So, I mean, I think you're right about cuts, although some will disagree, of course. It's why we're now seeing people with special educational needs and mental health problems being targeted on an almost daily basis by a certain type of politician. Well, I say almost daily. When they take a day off from blaming immigrants for things that aren't the fault of immigrants, they move on to blaming people who are poorly for things that aren't the fault of people who are poorly. You know that. I know that. Everybody who's not an idiot or a liar knows that.
And the people who are funding that are millionaires and billionaires who want to put their arm around all of us and say, if you think of the world's wealth as 10 coins, the wealthiest in the world own eight of them. So they'll put their arm around us and say, you want to be careful of all these immigrants and migrants and people who are claiming because benefits when they're not entitled to it because they're coming after your wealth. Except they've only got 2/10 of it.
I think it's
a diversionary tactic.
So what are you saying Rachel Reeves should do in terms of what is immediately feasible?
Immediately feasible, she's got to tax wealth. People whose assets in this country are more than £10 million are 1% wealth tax.
What if I've got a £10 million house and I haven't actually got £100,000 to spare?
I'll be very surprised if you've got a £10 million house that you haven't got
£100,000
to spare.
Hang on a minute, I'm just getting the world's tiniest violin. I did say that out loud. Your ears did not deceive you. You can rewind live radio and check. I don't know. It just seemed relevant at the time. It doesn't feel very relevant now, 48 seconds later. What if you've got a £10 million house and you can't get your hands on £100,000? You probably need some advice. Thank you, Steve. Excellent recommendations there of a hat-trick of superb best-selling books, the latest of which, of course, How They Broke Britain, has done, I think, about 250,000 copies, and Full Disclosure, a rather splendid podcast series, all of which happen to be me. Herbert is in Hounslow. Herbert, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I worked in the financial sector to retire.
I don't know if you've put a balaclava helmet on since you got put through by the producer, but we're going to try and sort your phoning out. Meanwhile, we'll have a little look at today's first entry into Idiot's Corner. Simon, who got in touch to say, you don't bankroll me, you idiot, in response to news that 1% of UK taxpayers, which includes me, pay 33% of the total collected and therefore bankroll huge swathes of the country. It's possible Simon is in the 1%, but it's unlikely. Here's a couple of his previous messages to the programme. What's a load of... Can I say that word? Begins with C, rhymes with rap. Can I say that one on the radio? Is that okay? Are you sure? Okay, he said, what a load of crap. Multiculturalism is obviously not working. Why do you not see this? Music to the ears of every billionaire that's ever lived. Yes, here's Simon. He's blaming foreigners for the fact that his life's a little bit rubbish. This station is a joke, is another one of his contributions. You're the problem as well, James. No prizes for guessing how Simon, who's definitely not bankrolled by the 1% of high earners in this country, spells your. And we could go on. Awful lot about Muslims. Awful lot about woke, lazy, lefty reporting, although that one was aimed at Tom, not at me, here's another one, Indian, Pakistani and black families have more kids than white families, and so there you go, that's someone who is definitely not bankrolled by the 1% of the population that are paying 33% of the total collected. Herbert is in Hounslow on a better phone line. Herbert, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning, James.
Hello.
I work in the financial sector and I'm part of the 1%. And I think I don't mind paying more tax. I think if you're in the top 1% and, you know, you're taxed more,
you're paying 1% tax because you're bright and you're capable, and you just basically earn more.
Oh, you're lucky, mate. Let's not get carried away.
No. I fell on 11 plus, you know,
I don't mean you personally. I just meant there'll be a lot of people in the 1% who went to schools like mine, and if they hadn't gone to schools like mine, they'd be, I don't know, they wouldn't be in the 1%. Let's just put it like
that. That's true. That's fair enough. But very quickly, James, I've got three ideas, okay, if I can run them past you as somebody in the finance sector. The first thing is equalise capital gains tax with income tax. That's just obvious, okay? That's the first thing.
So bring capital gains tax up to the same threshold as income tax, because at the moment, somebody who is simply reaping the dividends on their investments is paying less in tax than someone who is working a 15-hour day.
Yes, and that is just obvious.
Yeah, you know,
and it won't upset any Labour voters, because there are very few Labour voters that are liable for capital gains tax. So it's not an issue, and it won't. No, that's an obvious thing to do, and it won't be unpopular. I'm not sure why Rachel Reeves won't do it. The second thing that nobody seems to discuss, which I find very odd, is that there are massive, massive war chests of money with insurance companies, the Prudentials, the Legal & Generals, and all these other companies. And they're sitting on them because of the Limitations Act on missold investments. Okay, and being in that sector, what I find strange
I'm fascinated by this, but it's like my worst nightmare for someone to say things like Limitations Acts when I'm already late for the news.
Okay.
Just because I don't know what you're talking about, and I'm just going to believe you. What's the third idea?
I haven't
got time for your laughter.
Quick question to you, right? Because you said that you've only ever benefited from Tory government.
Yeah.
But it's actually Tory governments that raised the income tax level from 40% to 45%. So actually that was to your financial disadvantage.
Oh, I didn't benefit from that bit.
Yeah, so I think you should basically, you know, take that on the chin.
I will do, thank you. What's the third idea?
James, you just rushed me. I've forgotten now.
Right, welcome to my world. Welcome to my world. Here are the headlines with Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have taken the Senedd seat of Caerphilly, an area dominated by Labour for 100 years. The new MS, Lindsay Whittle, won 47% of the vote ahead of Reform UK on 36% and Labour on just 11%. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has arrived at Windsor Castle for an audience with the King. Leaders from the so-called Coalition of the Willing are due to hold talks in London later. The Chancellor is reportedly looking at raising income tax in next month's budget. It's understood Rachel Reeves is considering a breach of the Labour manifesto pledge to reduce a multi-billion pound shortfall. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:34 is the time. We will be catching up with events in Caerphilly shortly with somebody who was at the count last night. We definitely won't be canvassing Nadine Dorries' opinions about Plaid Cymru's excellent results, but hey-ho. Different strokes for different folks. I want you to tell me about Rachel Reeves's problems, especially with regards to the almost inevitable increase in tax that she's going to have to announce in her budget. We haven't really looked at the question of how that will play politically. If you've got an answer to that question, you know what to do. The answer to the question I asked you a moment ago is £160,000. Now, I don't know. I have absolutely no idea how we approach a question like that. Because some people will think that is an inconceivably large amount of money. And other people will be writing articles for the Daily Telegraph about how hard it is to survive on an income of £160,000. And both of those people are real. It's Mr. McCorber territory, isn't it? £160,000 minimum taxable income to be in the top 1% of taxpayers. If your income was entirely based on your earnings, as in your earned income, the minimum salary you'd need would be £201,000. To get into the top 0.5%, you need to be earning £236,000. Here's the thing, right? A lot of people in these categories don't think these people are rich. That they think rich is, you know, a million. A lot of people earning £236,000 or more will, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but they will be conscious of the cost of living crisis. Even, perhaps, of having VAT put on their children's school fees. I'm not suggesting sympathy for them, I'm just pointing out this is relevant when contemplating the fact that they are paying 33% of the total collected tax. This one surprised me. I thought this one would be higher. I've got to be honest with you. To be in the top 0.1% of earners, so in other words, to be in the top 10% of the top 1%, I hope I've got that right. I got an E in my AO level statistics. You need to be earning £650,000. So that's pretty much where they stop counting, at £650,000. And there is something, I don't know, there's something absolutely fascinating, isn't there, on a human level about these numbers, because you can respond to them in completely different ways. You can do what I do, and possibly naively, and say, well, this means that some of us earn too much, or that the distribution of wealth in this country is wrong. Or you can do what I suspect is a more natural response, actually, even if you're not in this cohort. And that is to say, God, that's not fair. You lot shouldn't be paying that much. And I don't know who's right. No one's right. No one's wrong. That's just where we are. I don't know what it says about the bigger picture. I've got another entrant for Idiot's Corner. It's a slightly more complicated one from Stuart, but I might let you decide whether he goes in or not. Toby is in Bristol in the meantime. Toby, what made you pick up the phone?
It was interesting listening to, and good morning, James.
Hello, Toby.
It was interesting listening to Reeves and her comments over the weekend and earlier this week about Brexit and its harm. And then Starmer's response to, should we rejoin the customs union? And he said, no, we've got all these wonderful deals and we renegotiated for the EU. And it's just sometimes I think useful to put some numbers on it, because 4% of GDP, which is widely accepted of what Brexit removed, is about £186 to £200 billion. Now, if he was willing to go back in, that would mean you didn't have to raise income tax, which is probably the only thing he can do, because I think, as one of your earlier callers has said, it's either welfare or it's tax. And the fact that he will not approach this is really telling as to how scared he is of what's around him at the moment. So I spoke to you before about Brexit and its impact and how destructive it has been. And yet he will not.
But you can't announce that. In terms of what Rachel Reeves has to do next month, she can't, even if she announced we're going to try to rejoin the customs union, it would have precisely zero fiscal impact over the next 12 months. And so, I'm not to be too strict with you, but you're contributing to a slightly different phone-in that we have actually had already this week. So, in terms of what her options are in November of 2025, joining the customs union and reaping the inarguable economic benefits thereof is not on the table.
I'd be perfectly willing to pay more tax. I do believe in a society that's funded, and I'm fairly funded, and I would be happy. I'm a school teacher, so I'm nowhere. I'm not near the 1%, anywhere close to it. But
so 1p on the 1p on the basic rate, which hits everybody proportionately in a way.
Yes, I think it's about the only progressive thing they can do. There aren't any options left because there is nothing to squeeze out of the system. It's been absolutely run dry and crippled for the last, well, since about 2010.
Yeah, thereabouts.
We've seen it. There is,
there or thereabouts.
And thereabouts. There aren't any other options. She has none. So I do agree that it's a longer term aim, and maybe it is a sort of a slowly, slowly catchy mousy situation. But it's the fact that it's drained so much money out that there is no money
We're a mythological society, aren't we, in a way? This idea that there is money to be found and spent but not to be accrued or collected is incredible. Everybody recognises that public services have declined, oddly enough, again, since roughly 2010, when public or patient satisfaction in the NHS, for example, was the highest it had ever been. Everybody feels that we are less policed, less effectively policed, that many people committing crimes are getting away with it. And yet when you rattle the tin, as it were, I mean, in retrospect, on a scale of 1 to 10, how stupid was it of Rachel Reeves to pledge not to put up income tax?
I think it was incredibly harmful because it basically paints her into a corner and just gives more ammunition to the people that disliked her from the moment she was announced that she would be a shadow chancellor.
Yeah.
You just get the Rachel from accounts comments flying in all directions.
I don't fully get that. Is that just misogyny? Is that just saying it's a woman? What's she doing running the Treasury?
Yes, our society is hideously misogynistic.
Yes, I agree.
And absolutely hates a successful woman who speaks up.
I see that
they absolutely load it. And that includes women who are perfectly happy to slate other women because they see them being successful and think that's just not fair.
Well, I don't know.
There is a huge amount of that.
Well, I do too. I'm going to expose myself to the possibility of indulging in it by treating you to a little snatch of question time from last night.
And the only time in the future when this problem is going to be dealt with any effectiveness and a plan is going to be delivered is when the two parties that have completely failed to control this have gone and Reform take power. Because Reform are the only party who have a plan in stopping illegal immigrants coming to our shores. You may laugh. You may not when
what is that
Reform
plan,
is
Nadine?
In
what,
government.
What is the plan?
Well, leaving the East HR is the first most important part of that plan.
So is international cooperation not
and
important
as the young man said, we may
what would
use
that do
the Royal
to
Navy.
What would leaving the ECHR do to international cooperation? Do you think it would help or hinder?
I don't, it's when it comes to our borders, well, help or hinder is irrelevant.
Nadine Dorries still stealing a living, whereas Rachel Reeves is the one on the receiving end of misogynistic abuse. Extraordinary. And I see Jess Phillips is in the firing line again. I don't know if you've seen the latest development. I told you on Wednesday, as soon as Kemi Badenoch stood up, that grooming gang inquiry gets set back months. I didn't expect Jim Gamble to take his hat out of the ring immediately, but the desperate attempts to toxify an inquiry called, in my view, the rather optimistic hope of providing the poor victims with settlement and closure has been turned into a political poison. A political poisoned chalice, so much so that the best qualified person left in the running to run the inquiry withdrew himself from consideration almost before Kemi Badenoch had sat down again. And now, if you didn't know, five victims on the panel have said that they will leave if Jess Phillips doesn't stay. In response to the four members, one of whom is working with Nadine Dorries' political party, she revealed on LBC earlier this week, and I've got no beef or God forbid anybody dares to criticise any of the victims. They've been to hell and back already. But I mean, if you could put an arm around them and give them a little bit of advice, it would be probably to have a little look at politicians' track records before trusting them. And now you've got four saying that they will only come back if Jess Phillips goes, and five saying they will leave if Jess Phillips doesn't stay. What an almighty mess. Simon's in Longridge. Simon, what would you like to say?
Oh, hiya, James.
Hello,
thanks for having me on.
You're
just
very
a
welcome.
Quick point, really. if we want to live in a civilized country where it works, and that's all I'm interested in, I'm afraid you have to pay more tax. There's no easy way around it. And the people who earn the most, and I'm not speaking from jealousy or anything like that. I used to earn quite a bit of money before doing the job I did now. It's just a case of you just got to pay it. You know, how many yachts do you need? How many planes? How many houses do you need? Is it going to affect your...
How much do you raise from that, though? Do we know how much? I think I disagree. I mean, you can do both. But I don't think the numbers, if we introduced a yacht tax, I don't think the numbers would come close to sticking a penny on for everybody.
Oh, I know. I am speaking slightly tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, you look at the Scandinavian countries, and their countries work. And the reason why their countries work is they pay sufficient tax. You know, everybody is complaining that this isn't working, this isn't working, this isn't working. If you want it to work, I'm sorry, it comes with a cost. There's no way, no other way around it. There just isn't.
And you can serve up some side orders, some of which are true, like Brexit, some of which are more ideological, like, we can't afford this and we can't afford that. So, but we need more money is the one thing that all politicians in a normal society would probably agree on. If we can agree on that, we need to raise more money and not go after disabled people or the parents of children with ADHD that's so crippling they can't go on public transport, so they've managed to qualify for a motability vehicle. Spoiler alert, a terrifyingly small number. Rather than those lies, you all agree that we need to raise more money, and then you can start arguing about where you're going to raise it from.
Yeah, it's just, I'm a care worker at the moment, and believe you me, the people who I look after and care for really don't have very much money. They don't ask for very much, and they deserve to be looked after with dignity and care. It's as simple as that.
Yes,
and likewise, I was in education. Education's falling apart because there is not sufficient money. The reason why we have a problem with SEN, there's just not enough money invested in it, and
it's like everything else. Spending money now actually saves money in the future. But we haven't lived in that kind of economy since about, 2010. You sound like a lovely man, Simon, and there are lovely people in this world. I really, really hope this doesn't invoke the curse of O'Brien when I say something nice about a politician and they let me down about an hour later. James Cleverly did it yesterday, would you believe? But the new... new assembly member for Caerphilly sounds like a really impressive human being. He's still a councillor. He's been a councillor, I think, for 50 years. He holds down four voluntary jobs. So he volunteers in four different sectors. He works in two local schools, a community coffee shop and a food bank. That's the kind of politician we want. The kind of politician we don't want, possibly the kind that spent yesterday swanning around Caerphilly, doing a lap of honour, and then when it became clear that his lot weren't going to win, was halfway up the M4 before the count had even finished. And we'll get a full update on what went on in that by-election after this.
This is LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Next summer sorted. Book a Jet 2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels. You'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included, and right now there's £120 off per couple with My Jet 2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the prize for next summer. Jet 2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. After national protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
Business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
When's the perfect moment to take that leap? With electric vehicles, that moment is now. The all-electric Leap Motor T03. Right now, with the Leap Grant, it's incredible value at 169 deposit and 169 per month with 0% APR, with amazing tech and spec too. Leap Motor. It's time to leap. Search Leap Motor T03. Personal contract purchase, Mint Green, T03, 48 months. Optional final payment, 5675. Leap Motor is credit broker, not in lender. Subject to status, T&Cs, Delantis Financial Services.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 minutes after 11. Two Stuarts. One goes into Idiot's Corner. One just gets a little slap on the wrist. This is the slap on the wrist. Why is everyone avoiding the elephant in the room? There's massive wealth inequality in this country, and we're talking about 1p on the basic rate of income tax. We need to recover the money the wealthiest have pinched from the state. Tax wealth, not work. We did that, mate, for about half an hour. It's not my fault you weren't listening. You can double-check if you want by rewinding live radio using the LBC app. But this Stuart, and I thought long and hard about this, mate, because I can't quite tell, and you do end it with a nice best regard, so I can't quite tell whether it is deliberately obtuse, but I'm afraid it does go into Idiot's Corner, but only, briefly, like a little quick visit, okay, with a quick reprieve. James, it's lovely to hear some of your callers claiming they are happy to pay more tax, but would you mind asking them why they don't? It's fully possible to make voluntary donations in the UK, so if they're happy to pay more, I guess that's a question. Why aren't you? Best regards, Stuart. Yeah, it is Idiot's Corner all day long, isn't it? Mate, that's an argument for abolishing tax and just relying entirely on voluntary donations. There is absolutely no point having a system that relies in any way on voluntary donations. Not least because people in the 1% are already shouldering 33% of the burden. Although, obviously, those figures are a little bit blunt. But also because some people, including almost everybody in Idiot's Corner, would almost certainly pay no tax at all while expecting the rest of us to pick up their particular slack. So it's and also, of course, every donation that everybody makes to charity, in a way, is a donation to an organisation that is doing something that should be state-funded. Charities have become infinitely more important during and after austerity. The stuff that should be done by the state that is now done by volunteers, including the new Senate member for Caerphilly, is off the charts. I love working for and with charities, but I also have in the back of my mind the uncomfortable knowledge that they shouldn't exist. And Eirin Bevan, to continue the Welsh theme of politics this morning, was pretty strong on charities. He described them in the most castigating of terms for this very simple reason that they shouldn't exist. But for people like Stuart, it's the people who are prepared to make voluntary donations who should be bankrolling the entire country rather than everybody in it. And it is to Caerphilly that we go next in the company of Will Haywood, the Guardian columnist and author of the Will Haywood newsletter. I know you were there. You were in the leisure centre. To paraphrase Hamilton, in circumstances that aren't immediately obvious, you were in the room where it happens. Well, what happened?
Well, what happened was Reform came in very excited, thinking they were going to win, and it quickly became apparent that they weren't going to. And it was interesting. I think what really struck me was a party that had ran an entire campaign on the basis of immigration in the Welsh local authority. Now, believe it or not, in Wales, with 3 million people, we have 22 local authorities. Mm. It's the Welsh local authority with the lowest level of immigration. 97% of people in Caerphilly were born in the UK. And that was the centre of Reform's entire campaign. And
you should see Clacton. I think Clacton's a similar level, actually. It is. I mention that because it's not as bonkers as it sounds. Historically, Farage's outfits always perform best in the areas where there's the least immigration, because those are the areas where it's easiest to spook people with things that aren't true.
And I think what Plaid actually did really well, and one of the reasons that was that they were pretty unequivocal in their opposition of the narrative that was put forward by Reform. And I think what we found out in Caerphilly is people were more scared of the people opposing immigration than they were of the immigrants.
How interesting.
So I think that was stuck.
What do we know about the winner? I've just bigged him up, Lindsay Whittle. He's been trying to win that seat since about 1843, I think.
Yes, and you can't doubt his tenacity. I think this was his 14th attempt at winning it. He was a strong local candidate in that he was a local candidate. He knew the lay of the land there. He has helped people out for literally half a century with stuff. When you've got that kind of recognition, it makes a really big difference. And I think what he did really well was to tap into the real fury that people feel with Labour in Wales. You were talking to the previous caller about the fact that we're kind of not investing long term. One of the first things that the UK Labour government did was to freeze local housing allowance. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, the place in the whole of England and Wales that has the fastest growing rents is Newport, right next to Caerphilly.
Is it really?
Not central London, nowhere else, it's Newport. And that decision, by the first decision the UK Labour government made, directly hit Wales harder than any other part of the UK. Part of the reason our house prices are growing faster is because they grew slower in the previous 10 years. So we're actually just catching up with everyone else. But that doesn't help renters who are really, really struggling. He tapped into that disgruntlement.
How significant is Welsh nationalism or the desire for Welsh independence to this picture?
Plaid Cymru have really deliberately tried to not talk about Welsh independence. They've tried to not.
I didn't know that.
They're still unequivocal in their desire for Welsh independence. The leader of Plaid Cymru has said he'd go independent tomorrow if he could. We see it in Scotland. A lot of people vote for the SNP who don't support Scottish independence. And the SNP are much more unequivocal in their support for independence. I think what is really interesting, really gets missed in the debate about nationalism in Wales, is the thing around Welsh identity. So all the evidence suggests that if you identify as Welsh in Wales, electorally, you have much more in common with someone who identifies as British in England. So British people in Wales have more in common with English people in England, much more likely to be right of centre and Brexit voting. And that Welsh group in Wales is the fastest growing group. So young people in Wales overwhelmingly skew Welsh. Historically, older Welsh people have been a bit apologetic in their Welshness. It had been Welsh British. But now Wales is moving strongly in that Welsh identity, which does skew left and does generally skew Remain in terms of electoral preferences.
Oh, interesting. You don't need any lessons from me on the efforts put in over the centuries to erase Welsh identity. So it's by the English. So it's quite gratifying to hear how that has failed and how the green shoots are springing up. But the story then is, I've criticised others for focusing on parties that didn't win when the big news is obviously the win for Plaid. But the broader picture here is the collapse of the Labour vote, I think.
It absolutely is. Welsh Labour have been the largest party in every general and Senedd election in Wales since 1922, which actually makes the most successful democratic party in history. We know that because they tell us every 45 minutes. But if Keir Starmer is the person who loses Wales, this juggernaut, Welsh Labour, who created that clear red water and managed to distinguish himself from UK Labour, it's going out with almost like a kind of slowly deflating balloon. It's the interesting thing with that 11% of the vote they got in the next Senedd election, 11% is essentially the cutoff point. Once you get below 11% under this very bizarre new proportional system we have, you can end up with no seats. So they are really dancing with the idea of not just having a small presence, but having almost no presence. And the idea of a Welsh Parliament with no Labour presence is historically just unimaginable.
Well, not least, really think about the politician I was close to quoting just before you came on, Aneurin Bevan. So how do you draw the line, Will? And you're winning quite a lot of new fans. Fred's just been in touch to say this guy is brilliant. How do you draw the line between how much of the dissatisfaction leads back to Downing Street and how much leads back to the leadership of Welsh Labour? Or is that a silly question?
I think it's unequivocally possible for Wales to be really shortchanged in a whole series of ways it's funded by Westminster and also be poorly managed at a Senedd level. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. You can absolutely argue about Wales being really shafted over issues like HS2, but then you can also beg the question why a country with a population the size of Greater Manchester has seven health boards.
Yeah, now these are all pertinent questions that some parties will be keener to answer than others. Well, thank you. I'm nicking that line, by the way, about people being more frightened of the people opposing the immigrants than they are of the immigrants themselves. That's a beautiful distillation of what appears to have happened. Because final point, of course, is that the turnout was extraordinary. So an awful lot of people manned the barricades yesterday in order to keep out the bloke who was doing a lap of honour around town, as far as I'm aware, before disappearing up the M4 as soon as it became clear which way the wind was blowing.
I mean, Nigel Farage was much more an imposing immigrant in Caerphilly yesterday than anyone with different coloured skin. Absolutely, it's and then he just vanished. It's incredible.
Well, I suppose you sent him back where he came from. Well, not you personally, but the people of Caerphilly. Will Hayward, thank you very much indeed. You can read more of Will's work on his own newsletter and indeed in the Guardian newspaper. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. No, it's not. It's approaching 11. Well, it's approaching 10 o'clock in a way, but that would be 10 o'clock tonight. It's approaching 11 o'clock this morning. It's also approaching 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock. No, it's all right. It's nearly 11 o'clock. He mentioned housing and rents, of course. It's surprising me with the news that Newport has the fastest acceleration of rent in the United Kingdom. I'm seeing a lot of stories at the moment about the importance of building more houses. I think it's a given. I think it's one of those unchallengeable observations, which makes the question of why aren't we building more houses and how hard will it be to build more houses arguably more urgent than it's ever been.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, a minister has admitted Labour is facing a very tough fight ahead of the Welsh Parliament elections in May. Plaid Cymru won the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly overnight, ahead of Reform UK in second and Labour in a distant third. The Conservative vote collapsed to 2% from 17% in 2021. The shadow policing minister, Matt Vickers, has played down the significance of the result for the Tories.
This is the Labour heartland, so I don't think anybody was running down the bookies with barrels of money to put on this one. It wasn't really something that we were necessarily expecting to win. Of course, a disappointing result, but actually, by-elections are an opportunity for people to send a message, and they've sent a message to the Labour Party.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has arrived at Windsor Castle for an audience with the King. Leaders from the so-called Coalition of the Willing are due to hold talks in London later. They're expected to discuss ways to step up pressure on Moscow, including long-range weapons for Kyiv. Rachel Reeves is said to be considering putting a penny on income tax in her budget next month. The Chancellor has repeatedly insisted she will stick to Labour's pledge not to raise income tax, national insurance or VAT. But some advisers believe breaking the pledge might be the only way to fill a hole in the public finances. Figures shared with LBC show more than 50,000 bicycle thefts went unsolved in England and Wales last year. The data, put together by the Liberal Democrats, show just 2% of investigations result in a charge. The party's Home Affairs spokesperson, Max Wilkinson, says it's a real problem.
That is effectively the decriminalisation of bike thefts. And there have been some other really concerning things here as well, including the British Transport Police saying that they're not even going to investigate if a bike has been stolen after it being locked up for more than 2 hours, which is absolutely outrageous.
The Home Office says 3,000 new police officers are being put on the streets to tackle crimes like bike theft. Retailers saw sales rise for a fourth consecutive month in September. Analysts say the 0.6% increase in volumes was driven by the new iPhone and demand for jewellery. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 95.76. That is up 5 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places seeing some sunny spells and scattered showers. Cloudier with heavier rain in northeastern parts of the UK. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 11 is the time. It was interesting hearing that person in the news talking about going down the bookies with a big bag of money, because if you were able to place a bet on the likelihood of the current government building 1.5 million new homes by the end of the current parliament, I think you'd expect pretty long odds, wouldn't you? Or rather, you'd be much more likely to place a bet on them not reaching the figure. It seems to be, or the planets seem to be aligning. The Mayor of London has reduced the requirement for so-called affordable housing, which is something of a misnomer in many cases, but it's affordable to more people than non-affordable housing. It's more affordable housing, I suppose, is the best way of describing it. It will still be, of course, way out of the reach of many people, but the requirement of how many homes in any new development must be affordable is being reduced. He's also blamed Brexit for the failure to meet the house building targets that he had already established, and the government have given City Hall £300 million to build more homes. This follows a slump in construction, which left him significantly short of his own target of £88,000 a year. Steve Reid, the Housing Secretary, has been punching this week. He's been coming out very robustly, talking of this funding pot to pay developers towards the cost of clearing land earmarked for development, as well as powers to loosen planning rules. Another move involves so-called brownfield sites getting almost automatic planning permission if the right proposal and the right developer comes forward. And I'm sure it's correct to put Brexit on the hook for some of these problems, not least, I imagine, but I am not really a construction worker. I imagine that the major impact of Brexit on the construction industry has been on the workforce. But the visas in place, well, I don't know. Would you want to come here? A country that is currently boiling itself backwards when it comes to race relations and immigration. Would you fancy coming here to put in back-breaking shifts on a building site? I don't know. Just a question. And we've asked this question, I think, a million times, maybe slightly more than that. And I still don't really have concrete answers. Panorama this week had a little look at that £1.5 million pledge, million homes pledge, and it set me off in quite a strange direction. What would a win be? Because 1.5 million homes, it obviously, if they get over that line, it's trebles all round and party poppers and champagne. But if they missed it by, I mean, if they got over 1 million, why didn't they just say 1 million? I appreciate this is not the most obvious line of inquiry or contemplation, but I'm fascinated sometimes by the damage politicians do to their own fortunes. Rachel Reeves pledging not to raise taxes when almost everybody thought that she would probably have to. Their argument is we didn't realise just the scale of the mess that we were going to inherit, and the long, long hangover of Liz Truss being allowed anywhere near the Treasury, and the even longer hangover of Brexit that many people on the opposition benches are still pretending could have been or should have been or would have been a good idea. There is a wonderful Brexit, but it goes to a different school. So anyone, I think, paying attention could see that the Chancellor was going to be faced with some fairly hefty calls to increase some forms of taxation. And I mean, having done this job for a long time now and turned our attention to housing on, let's just say, more than one occasion, I just found the 1.5 million new homes in England alone, in the context, against the backdrop of our current political, economic and social situation, somewhat optimistic. But Steve Reid, as I say, has come out punching. He says that they will meet the goal, and he told the Panorama programme that found a plethora of experts to express scepticism at the prospect, up to and including a professor who said there was, quote, absolutely no way it would succeed, and a Home Builders Federation spokesperson saying that the prospect looked increasingly distant. Steve Reid insisted they'd absolutely meet the goal, and told Panorama that the scepticism would make, quote, celebration all the sweeter when he hit it. What would you do if you were him? I guess he's got until 2029. I think if it comes in at like 1.1 or 1.2 million, they'd claim a win. That's what I'd do anyway. And what's the point in trying to dilute expectations now? You've made this pledge. You may as well stick to it. They're doing about 200,000 new homes a year instead of 300,000. And you could make a case, if they hadn't set up the target at 1.5 million, they could have gone for 1 million and reached it. So why aren't we building more homes? 0345 6060 973. And I like this conversation because you can come at it as an economist, you can come at it as a greedy property developer, you can come at it as a member of a non-existent tribe of property developers who are not greedy. Don't at me. Call me, 0345 6060 973, if I've just maligned you personally. And you can come at it from somebody in the construction industry. Why is your business not doing more? I would imagine that armies of Eastern European workers, who we told to go home in 2016, did go home. Some of the economies of Eastern European countries suggest that they're working bloody hard there. And a lot of that has been replaced, as in almost all areas of immigration in this country, with people from Southeast Asia, including building sites. I noticed that's a heck of a lot of development around me. And that, I think, is why I'm a bit... Who did I interview yesterday? Oh, Jimmy Wales was here yesterday. Did you hear that? The Wikipedia founder. And he described himself as pathologically optimistic. No one's ever accused me of being South Asia, did I? What did I say? Southeast Asia. I meant South Asia, obviously. Everyone's a critic. I don't think anyone's ever accused me of being pathologically optimistic. And part of the reason why Jimmy is like that is because he grew up in a part of Alabama where all of the rocket scientists had been relocated to after the Second World War. So he grew up in this extraordinary atmosphere of potentiality, if that's a word. This extraordinary atmosphere of the future being on your doorstep. The windows of his home would shake sometimes while they were testing out new rocket technology. And the sense in that era, he was born in 66, actually, just after the World Cup final. The sense that he was, that the world was on the cusp of a wonderful new era, of a brave new world. Runs through him and explains an awful lot of his decisions, like this final, a new frontier, this pioneering spirit, which you'd need, wouldn't you, to set up Wikipedia. And I don't know that anyone has ever put Brentford into that category or that space, but there's so much building work in Brentford at the moment, which is my manner, that I kind of probably come at this with a slightly different attitude to you, in that I'm thinking, I think things are going really well. That's how I know there's a lot of lads from South Asia on the building sites, because I'm on the bus with them in the mornings. But there's so much building going on around us, and I kind of wonder whether the question of why we aren't building more is still the right question to ask. Is it possible that Steve Reed's right and the government is going to get close to 1.5 million new homes by 2029. Look, if they're currently on 200,000 a year and they need to be on 300,000 a year, they're only a year behind schedule. And he keeps doing things that are designed to prompt more building. So let's do it that way round. Do you think he might do it? And this is where the closer you are to the industry, the more qualified you will probably be to answer the question. Steve Reed seems absolutely confident, although he's a politician, so you take it with a pinch of salt. He seems absolutely confident that he's going to get very close, at least. He seems confident he's going to get over the 1.5 million mark, but I'd say if he got close to it, he'd probably get given a free pass. Do you share his enthusiasm? Because bizarrely, based entirely on where I live in West London, I currently do. And in fact, you probably know the building. The old GlaxoSmithKline building that you see when you're coming in on the M4, that's now being turned into flats. There's the old dockyards down by the canal and around the river where I knock about is being turned into flats. They're going up so quickly. They knock down a factory on a Monday, and this is the architectural equivalent of a Craig David song. They knock it down on Monday, clear the space on Tuesday, take it for a drink on Wednesday, and on Friday there's a new apartment block up on the spot. We chilled on Sunday. I don't want to do the British thing, which is what we've always done in this space together before. We've always done the negativity. I want the honesty, but is it inspired by Jimmy Wales?
Is it beyond the realms of possibility that there's room here for a little bit of optimism? I'm basing it entirely on what's happening on my doorstep, which may turn out to be anomalous or unrepresentative, but you know whether or not it is. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Do you think he's going to do it? He has said that his job should be on the line if he doesn't get there, but experts are queuing up to tell, in this case, Panorama, but frankly, anyone who'll listen, that they are going to miss the target. Do you think he's going to do it? Do you, like me, have a sense that house building in this country is actually, against all the odds, enjoying something of renaissance? And then I want you to tell me about something quite specific, which is this. One of the reasons why I have understood over the years I've been doing this, and you've been explaining things to me, one of the reasons why we don't build more houses is because the big companies, the big building companies, sit on land until they'll get more money for the houses that they build than they would do today. So you own a huge swathe of land. It's got all the correct planning in place, but you're looking at the current economy, you're looking at everything from interest rates to fiscal projections, and you're thinking, do you know what, we'll sit on this for 10 years and we'll make a ton more money. That's really what shareholder-driven economic decisions demands. How big a deal is that? How much of this is actually down to too much building being in the private sector? You'll be able to find some Herbert from Tufton Street to insist that it should all be in the private sector. But I just wonder who's qualified to explain why having all of this in the private sector is actually a recipe for delay, postponement and inactivity. When if you removed the profit imperative, if you said, well, look, we're going to make money if we build these houses, perhaps not quite as much as we would make if we waited 5 years, but the political pressure comes from the public sector to build, jolly well build them now. And that is a large part of the reason why, A, we haven't built enough over the years, and B, perhaps we're building more now. I don't know. I know very little about this world. I just know they're building a lot of new flats near me, and that suggests that Steve Reed might be in with a slightly better chance than some people give him for getting over that 1.5 million new homes target. It is 1116. The number you need, you know it, 0345 6060973.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 18 minutes after 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. James in Bishop Stortford will be up first. Before that, quick text. Paul in Streatham's been in touch. Say, not always your biggest fan, James. Why do you have to put that? Why can't you just say the nice stuff? You're supposed to say, I love you, James, but that wouldn't work in this context. Not always your biggest fan, James, says Paul in Streatham, who's notoriously hard to please and very often wrong. But your architectural version of Craig David had me in stitches. It's interesting you're messaging from Streatham. I have a special message for somebody in Streatham, would you believe? I have a message for the chef at the Manor Arms pub in Streatham, to whom I would like to say thank you because a customer in your establishment was in there yesterday and noticed you were listening to my programme on catch-up at double speed. And this is apparently something that young people do now. Were you aware of this? What do I sound like on double speed? A smurf? Do I sound like a smurf? But, anyway, the chef at the Manor Arms in Streatham, listening to the James O'Brien Experience, as nobody calls it, at double speed. So if I start talking like this, then when he listens back to this show later at double speed, it'll sound normal. Will it? I don't know. I didn't even know the kids did that. I must check with my own. Do you do it? Do you listen to stuff at double speed? I mean, how could you possibly keep up? Honestly, the way my brain works, he's fizzing over there, fizzing over here. Turn that up to double speed and you won't know what day it is. James is in Bishopsthorpe. But James, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Yeah, I work a bit in the sector and this is a complicated issue. It's not down to one point. I can run you through. There's probably 6 to 8 different issues that all
six
come
to
into
eight.
Play. Yeah, it's huge. So,
which question are you answering? Because I've forgotten what I asked.
The 1.5 million.
Okay.
Question.
Yeah, good man. Go on.
So, just no chance of that. So the start point is that housing is mostly delivered by the private sector, yeah, which is profit driven. So, if the government wants to deliver it, they need to do it themselves or
bring in separate
financing. But just to run you through sort of the process of what developers have to do. So a developer to develop out, let's just call it, 200 residential units, has to buy the land. So they need to be competitive and actually secure the land. They need to go then through a hugely long planning process, which involves a lot of costs, including, surveys that need to be written, architects' fees, all of that cost totally on spec. They then go to the planning committee and get sometimes very, very, very subjective committee members who will turn something down for no apparent reason or on a whim.
Yes.
So you've got all of that. So there's the time, there's the cost. Let's say that they do get a permission. That's great. Anything over 6 stories now has to go through something called Gateway 2. So this is a post-Grenfell new legislation and regulation, which means that certain things, essentially design has to, there's design work that needs to be done up front. And the regulator actually has to approve it. Now, this is delaying, at the moment, start-on-site schemes that are over 6 stories by 12 to 18 months. So you used to be able to get permission and start.
I mean, this is tricky, because I don't think many people listening to this are going to think of the Grenfell Tower tragedy and conclude that we should not have brought in new measures to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
And that's not what I'm saying.
No, I know, but I'm just pointing that out. I mean, it may be causing delay, and that may, of course, make the 1.5 million target less likely to be achieved. But it doesn't per se make the new regulations a bad thing, does it?
Not at all. Not at all. It's just been done very, 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 very badly.
Now you've got a client online too, James.
Yeah, exactly that. So all of a sudden you have this huge planning process, which probably takes about a year or more. By the way, and then you've got Gateway 2, which is another year, if you get it, and people are being rejected for all sorts of reasons.
So everywhere development, it's already come out of the end of this process, yeah. And so it's not necessarily evidence of good...
It only came in October 23.
Okay.
So anything you see on site at the moment, it's quite likely that it had a permission and started building before that.
Oh, that's interesting.
So all of the stats, in terms of new starts, have just fallen off a cliff. It's largely because of Gateway 2, and also...
Well, they're doing 200,000 a year at the moment.
Yeah, that might be sort of smaller stuff, but, to really hit those targets, you need some towers, essentially, to be delivered. But the problem we've got now at the moment is that construction costs have gone up dramatically. You've got the cost of finance, so interest rates have gone up, so borrowing costs. You've got, yields, so if you're an institutional investor looking to buy or fund one of these developments... The yield that you will now fund it for is softer, which means that when you're doing your tournament appraisal, the numbers don't stack for developers.
This is the bit where your world is impenetrable to everybody else, because I think most of us...
It's just the price you pay. So the price you pay...
No, I understand that. Let me finish. What I'm trying to articulate is the fact that when you start talking about yields, you are actually talking about developers with assets on which they will not build, because at some point in the future, they believe, they will have a much more profitable process in place to build on that land. And there's not a lot you can do about that while profit is the imperative. I mean, that is, you know, where the public...
But I don't think it's a case of saying, we could deliver this and make 5% profit, or we can make 20% profit if we wait. The problem is now is that there is no profit. So there's two exits normally for house builders and developers. One is the build-to-sell market. So people come along and buy them off plan. With the removal of Help to Buy, that market's disappeared. Plus also a lot of international investors, and obviously you'll have your own opinion about those, but they've disappeared as well. And the institutions...
Well, it's not an opinion. It's if the government's pledging to build new homes, it means new homes for people to live in.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I'm just saying, so that's an aside point, right? I mean, I don't necessarily agree with international investors either buying them, but they've gone away as well.
Sure.
So the house builders, they don't have that market to sell to and deliver them. And then the other thing is that when you have institutional investors who would fund the developer to deliver them a 300-unit tower, the return they want is different to what it was 4 years ago, which means that it's not profitable for the developer. And then they won't build it because...
Or not as profitable.
Well, no, not profitable. The problem is the equation to make this work has changed so dramatically.
Well, I mean, why am I not seeing loads of building companies post losses then or put out profit warnings?
It's feeding through.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait and see. And I suppose your answer to my other question will be the same. Is that why am I seeing development to the left of me, development to the right of me? Admittedly, I live in London, but there's building everywhere in a way that it didn't feel like there was 3 years ago.
It would have been, projects would have started already.
Then Steve Reid needs to talk to you, I suppose, because he seems very upbeat and very optimistic, and albeit that politicians have to promise the earth and then deliver a little bit less, it seems unlikely that they're going to miss it by a million miles. It's just a question of what the electorate would hold, isn't it? What the electorate would ride. I think if he misses it by a quarter of a million, he'll probably be okay. Farage would claim a win if he missed it by a million. But I think Steve Reid might be able to claim a win if he... Donald Trump would claim a win if he actually ended up knocking down houses instead of building 1.5 million. But the current government is of a rather different order. That planning thing comes back again and again and again. People didn't quite understand why Keir Starmer spoke about it so early in his administration. So if things have actually got worse rather than better, then that is going to be a rather large problem. And to my embarrassment, I can't find the story that I'm sure I saw earlier today about brownfield sites having the planning eased. I'm sure I'll find it during the next news bulletin. Meanwhile, Mark is in Bury St Edmunds. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I kind of going to say really what your previous caller just said. I mean, it's not in private developers' interest to hold on to land. That's an absolute fallacy.
Is it? I hope so.
So as your previous caller mentioned, it's the planning system that takes so long. If you're looking at a site, let's say a couple of thousand homes, I'm not talking about towers, I'm talking outside of London here.
Yeah.
That could be in planning for 5 to 10 years. There have been sites I'm aware of that have been in like that, and it's because there's these rules and regulations that come in and come out that make it a little bit more difficult to build. Now, admittedly, a developer has some kind of power. If they're building about 2,000 homes, they have a little bit of financial power to say, well, actually, we can build things into the environment here, like, a new school, a new surgery, all those kind of things. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that it's the local council, not the national government, the local council interpretation of the planning.
I thought they were trying to change this. I thought they were trying to take it away from councils. But they are.
They are trying to change it,
right.
and yes, the government has quite rightly intervened on a few instances where they have been in planning for 5 years, and now suddenly it's now granted because the government intervened. They need to do more of that. But developers holding onto land, I think, is a fallacy.
Well, I hope so. And I mean, you're in the sector, obviously, so I'm going to take your word for it. Maybe the truth lies somewhere between the two positions. It does go on, but nowhere near enough to have as big an impact as some people argue. And that may be Steve Reid is deriving some of his optimism from the fact that the direction of traffic is as you've described it. They are intervening. They are taking away from councils some of these decisions. And I don't know if you've seen this story in the Times today, that the industry could be given automatic go-aheads for certain styles of homes on brownfield sites. So if you were developing in an urban area with, for example, Georgian townhouses in an attempt to accelerate house building, then you would get a passport. You'd get a green light from the get-go. That's the biggest thing here. Talking to you, talking to James, looking at my messages. If you can make the planning process easier and quicker, then you can massively accelerate the speed at which houses can be built.
I mean, getting planning is one thing.
Go on.
And as your previous caller said, they may have got planning. There could be another 2 or 3 years to actually start because of the conditions attached to that planning.
No, but not this. Yeah. This is new. This is in the news today. I finally found the story.
Right, okay, I'm not seeing that.
Well, you should. This is outrageous. I should charge you for this kind of consultation.
You should.
So brownfield passports mean that if you can guarantee that you've got a sort of aesthetically pleasing plan, and that will be a template, so it won't be development specific. There'll be the kind of properties that are just considered to be desirable, and developers who are planning to put those up will be fixed with national rules and can't be knocked back by local objections. I mean, I'll tell you what's interesting, Mark. People think of housing as quite a moribund subject. I don't. I'm absolutely fascinated by it because everybody needs somewhere to live. And my favourite subjects are the ones that have an air of universalism about them. But I have a sense, even when I speak to naysayers or people who are sceptical, I have a sense that everybody in it thinks it could be much better. Everybody in the industry thinks it wouldn't be that hard to make it a much more efficient process to begin building projects.
I agree. I mean, as a small developer myself, I want to build houses. Okay, I don't want to hold on to a piece of land. If I bought a piece of land, that's costing me money. So I need to do something with that land. And if I can't do something with it, I've got money sitting there for whatever meant for something.
Well, I get that. It may be different. There may be economies of scale. I mean, I always think about the pub round the corner. I talk about it endlessly. I could not for the life of me understand why it stood empty for 10 years and nobody just went in and... but, of course, the people that owned it own so much stuff that they're just sitting there waiting for someone to come in and buy the whole plot and turn it into a massive international hotel. But, that you see, so two calls that both question the likelihood of Steve Reid delivering, but which, because I'm in a pathologically optimistic mood, I actually see as grounds for optimism. Because you're describing things that a government can do, and this is why Starmer talked about it early doors. Things that can be done to actually make it a heck of a lot easier. So you're dealing with NIMBYism, you're dealing with recalcitrant councils, and you're dealing with the unnecessarily long processes between forming a desire to build a bunch of homes and breaking the ground on building a bunch of homes. And look, I don't know whether Steve Reid knows something that we don't, but I just got a feeling on this one that things might be a lot closer to 1.5 million by 2029 than they are now. And isn't it interesting? Well, actually, that's because of what people have decided to start calling the Boris wave, isn't it? The construction industry decimated potentially by Brexit. But of course, a lot of those jobs have been filled by people on visas from entirely different parts of the world. And part of those visas include the right to bring family with you. Absolutely rightly and fairly. But if you're obsessed with immigration numbers, then that's why they have gone up exponentially in some areas. I like this topic. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Plaid Cymru are celebrating a Senedd by-election win in Caerphilly, breaking Labour's 100-year hold on the area. The Plaid leader, Rhun-Ap Iorwerth, says the win marks a reset for Welsh politics ahead of May's full set of elections. The Ukrainian President, Volodymyr Zelensky, has been hosted by the King at Windsor Castle. Leaders from the so-called Coalition of the Willing are due to hold talks in London later. And Rachel Reeves is reportedly looking at raising income tax in her budget next month. It's understood the Chancellor's considering a breach of Labour's key manifesto pledge to reduce a multi-billion pound shortfall. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Step aboard the legend of the Titanic, London's award-winning exhibition devoted to the world's most famous ocean liner at Dock X Canada Water. Walk her decks, explore her cabins, discover her secrets. With 360-degree projections, VR, an interactive metaverse, artifacts and more. Book your tickets today at legendoftitanic.com.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
You have 30 seconds to defuse a bomb. But it isn't any bomb. It's a chemical weapon filled with poisonous gas planted by a serial killer. You need quiet. But your ears never stop ringing. You haven't slept properly in months.
Oh, God.
You're on the edge. And you've only got 3 seconds left.
Dad! Lana! Please!
Trigger Point. Returns October 26 on ITV1 and ITVX. Hold your breath.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 25 to 12. Before we get back into housing, just a little observation that is a cause for some relief. I don't know if you were listening on Monday when I pointed out that the rest of the media seemed to be supremely unconcerned about some genuinely hideous comments by a Conservative politician called Katie Lamb. She was talking about sending people home, even though this was their home, people with every legal right to be here, being somehow summarily rounded up and shipped out of the country. It was an extraordinary, unpleasant intervention because it went further and talked about how the result of these mass deportations of people with a legal right to live here would be cultural coherence. She talked about how the country would become culturally coherent. And I spoke about it on Monday with a deep sense of sadness. There are two other stories around at the moment, one involving a newspaper journalist and one involving a radio presenter who have engaged in, frankly, extraordinary public racism, albeit online, where some people pretend freedom of speech should trump not just common decency, but also the law. And I just worry that all three of these stories are evidence of the Overton window moving, of very, very obviously bigoted National Front-style ideas no longer being properly challenged in the public space. As far as I'm aware, the Daily Express journalist has still got his job, and I don't have any concrete evidence at the moment, but I don't know what has happened to the radio presenter. But I do know, and I just say this, when I boast, I admit that I'm boasting. I'm not saying, oh, yes, we were here on Monday and everyone else is here now. I'm just really relieved that as the story has achieved a little bit more coverage, the response has got a little bit closer to what it should have been from the very start and what it should always be in a civilised, decent country like ours, including Conservative MPs who have now expressed deep discomfort about Katie Lamb's comments that people legally settled here should be forced to leave to make the UK culturally coherent. If we are using phrases like that, one Tory MP said overnight, we need to explain what they mean. Culturally coherent is either dog whistle or it's so vague it's meaningless. Go home is a chant used by people who are bigoted or racist. So we have to be very careful when using phrases like go home, when talking in particular about legal migration. Keir Starmer finally condemned Lamb's views yesterday, saying, I can't tell you how much I disagree with her. I think that her approach, where people who are lawfully in this country, who have been working in our communities, perhaps in our schools, in our hospitals, running businesses, our neighbours, people lawfully here, she wants to reach in and remove them from our country for cultural reasons. That is how far the Conservative Party has sunk. I said it on Monday and I'll say it again now. It's the single grossest contribution to public discourse by a member of a major proper political party that I can remember hearing or seeing in my lifetime.
I wasn't alive when Enoch Powell did his thing. But that comment, that combination of threatening people here peacefully and correctly with removal in pursuit of what she calls cultural coherence is stone-cold disgusting. And it turns out that even in the Tory party that was culled of all integrity, decency and honesty in 2019 by Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings, turning it into a place where people like Katie Lamb feel not only welcome but also empowered to make hideously obnoxious contributions to public discourse like this, it appears that thankfully there are still a few people in that party who know the difference between right and wrong. I'll tell you something else as well while we're doing predictions. Kemi Badenoch doesn't know what her own party's policy is in this space. She doesn't fully understand what it is because she doesn't do the detail. You can see that every week at PMQs. What are we going to do this week? Well, I don't know. What are all the weirdos shouting loudest about on Twitter? That's what we'll go in on. That's what we'll do. I think when they said, Downing Street said on Wednesday that her comments were broadly in line with party policy, you probably had some indication that Kemi Badenoch, James Cleverly certainly gave the impression yesterday that he didn't really know exactly what it was Katie Lamb was talking about, whereas Katie Lamb would argue she was talking about established Conservative Party policy. Watch this space. Back to housing. And the question of sort of whether or not he might actually do it. If not 1.5 million homes, then as near as damn it, shall we say. It's not massively optimistic yet, but I'm still doubtily fighting for pathological optimism, a concept that the founder of Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, introduced us to yesterday. Adam's in Plymouth. Adam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Unfortunately, I'm bringing some well-educated pessimism.
Won't work, mate. It won't work. I mean, I'm a booster. Boosterism from O'Brien. That's me. Carry on.
I know you've had some smaller developers on saying about the planning permission being an issue.
Yes.
But actually, when you get to the big developers, then it's less of a problem.
Good.
And so the problem that you've got is the land banking for those people because they can afford to and because it actually does work in their advantage.
Yeah.
So if you have a development, say, for 5,000 homes and you can build them out at 150 a year,
yeah,
then you keep the prices high, but also you're being expected to put all of the community infrastructure in place at the same time and all of the employment space in place as well to support that community. And the longer you leave it, you can then make an argument to say, well, costs are rising, it's no longer viable anymore, therefore we can't deliver this community facility. But if we put a few extra houses on that bit instead, then that will keep our profit level up and make it viable again. So,
and these are negotiations that are conducted between, I mean, to put it nicely, sharkish entrepreneurs.
It's massively powerful housing developers
that's
who
better.
Have the ear of government.
Yes, that's better. And on the other side of the table, you've got
versus an individual planning officer in a small district local authority.
Yes. Yes, so, you put it brilliantly, actually. I don't know why I was trying to put words in your mouth. Everyone can picture that now. So yes.
You know, and in terms of challenging that, so they have an army of people working for them who can pull together financial forecasts and show the viability and make it look however they want it to look. And then unless a local authority is going to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds doing exactly the same to challenge it, then you're on a hiding to nothing. So they end up squeezing bits out of the development and increasing the amount of housing that they can get.
I said we were going to have a playground, but hey, I said maybe, you know, who needs a school?
Well, and the same with employment space. So, they can commute to another town because, if we can build less units, but we can get a few more houses on that bit as well, then,
More money for us. And that's why the specs change. You sometimes see it happening if you pay attention to these things in your local area, the development.
And people wonder why sort of NIMBYism exists. And it's not that they don't want the development. It's weird because I'm involved on ground level, so I deal with a lot of planning applications and communities, and so
they don't want the creep.
Well, it's they want to make sure that the infrastructure goes in with them, and at the moment, the longer a developer leaves it, the easier it is for them to squeeze out the infrastructure.
How would you fix it?
It's a That's a tough one. I think that if government... So government's keen to get more permissions in place, but given that there's already over a million existing planning permissions awarded in the UK for houses, I would really focus on forcing people to build out sites once they've got the permission. Because unless you do that...
That's easy. I can fix that. Just fine them.
Well, they'll pay the fines because they'll never be enough. But
I'll fine them more.
But I mean,
this is easy.
You know,
I can do this with my eyes shut.
there's a site that I've been dealing with where you know they're talking about hundreds of millions of pounds of profit, and if they lose like £50 million of profit, they're still making a huge profit out of it. So you know,
well, hang on a minute. James in Bishop Stortford was telling us that these poor people can barely scratch a penny together.
Yeah. So and I do sympathise with smaller developers because. Yeah. In those small developments and small developers, then the planning costs and the reports that they have to do, the environmental studies, do add up. But in the grand scheme of a 5,000 home development, it's peanuts. They're not spending $100 million on these reports.
It's like everything else, or not quite everything, but it's like so many of the things that we talk about. You're sitting here waiting for, as you've described them, massive, heavily lobbying organisations dedicated to delivering the biggest possible profits for their investors and their shareholders. And then you've got politicians who somehow think that they'll do the right thing out of duty or out of patriotism or out of altruism, whereas in fact the only way to get these companies to do what's best for the country while still making big profits, Adam, that's the point. No one's endorsing communism, although I'd like to see a little bit more public sector building. That's probably a slightly more distant dream. You still make enormous profits, but the role of government is to preside over the trade-off between profit and delivery. And I don't... Do you think it's an impossible dream there? I don't think it is. Is it?
I don't think it's impossible. I think that you could look at the planning system and actually introduce time limits and expiry dates
exactly
on planning permissions.
Exactly that, yes. And that, I mean, maybe that is on the agenda. There is some fairly big movement in these spaces, partly on the... I mean, because, of course, it doesn't matter if you give people a brownfield passport to build a bunch of new homes, if they're then going to do what Adam described. So you just need something in place, that simply compels these big, big, big developers to do what they've signed up to do. And it's interesting, isn't it, how there's no consensus among our calls, and yet there's a lot of expertise. I suspect everybody's telling the truth, but that the answers to the questions that I'm asking change according to the size of the developer you're discussing. And I guess that the cold, hard truth of that observation is that the bigger the developer, the more relevant they are to the likelihood of Steve Reed meeting his 1.5 million homes by 2029. Or not. And it's not an elephant in the room. I think we're overusing that phrase a bit at the moment. But the idea that you have to remove the public sector from this space in order to accelerate house building, which is very Tufton Streety in its genesis, it seems to be increasingly absurd, when really the best way to ensure more house building is to dilute the primacy of profit in the process. Not remove it, but dilute it. And if local authorities were actually funding and building the homes themselves, then the profit made from selling them or renting them would make its way back to the local authority. Sounds very suspiciously like socialism.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Bridget Phillips, Education Secretary. Do you think that the Gaza process should continue to go ahead?
I do recognise why over many, many months people have taken part in protests, because they see appalling suffering. I would urge people just to reflect on the impact that protest can have. Just because you have the right to protest doesn't mean that you have to protest in all circumstances.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Stephen Gethins, who's SNP Foreign Affairs spokesperson, are you keen to have another endless conversation about independence because you're so afraid of your own domestic record after 17 years in office?
The Scottish government does not have the same powers as the UK government.
You've got the most powerful subnational parliament in Europe.
That's garbage. I'm sorry.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
Tax is changing from April 2026.
If you're a sole trader or a landlord
with a turnover above £50,000,
you'll need to use recognised software to keep records
and send quarterly updates of your income and expenses.
There's no avoiding it. Tax is changing. Get ready. Search HMRC Making Tax Digital.
Ah, the familiar sounds of autumn. Time for woolly jumpers, spiced lattes and the crunch of leaves underfoot. But at Southeastern, we know those same leaves can make train journeys tricky. When compressed under train wheels, they can create a slippery surface just like black ice. That's why we're clearing the way with special leaf-busting trains, so you can travel safely, whatever the weather. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/autumn.
Southeastern. Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's Steel Drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one-time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 12 is the time. If you owned a and I think I might have a caller on the line who does. If you owned a massive swathe of land and you were entitled to build on it, why wouldn't you? Answer, because you're so rich, you can actually afford to wait until you'd make even more money from building on it than you would if you built on it now. See, I don't know what you're like. You're probably like me. And so you just take what you can get now. You know, if somebody said, take a couple of years off work, and when you come back, you'll be on £1 million a show. I don't know that. I'm not sure I could afford to. But B, my mind doesn't work like that. That's a bad analogy, actually, because that's for earning, isn't it? It's just, so you've got an opportunity to make 500 quid today, or £5 million today, but if you wait 5 years, you'll make £20 million. How wealthy would you have to be in order to see that? Because it's a financially sensible thing to do over a 10-year period. You come out on 20 million instead of on 5 million over a 10-year period. But over the next 5 years, you come out with nothing, as opposed to 5 million. So it's short-term versus long-term. And it's a bit like Vimes's boots, isn't it, in Terry Pratchett? If you can afford to do something that is more expensive, you end up doing better than the person who can't. So I buy a pair of boots from the cheap end of the market because I need some boots, but they're cheap, so they break. And I need to replace them more often than I would have to if I bought expensive boots. And in fact, the difference between these boots is so much that the poor person ends up spending more on boots over a 50-year period than the rich person does, which is insane because the rich person has bought the most expensive boots in bootland. But he doesn't have to replace them because he's bought the expensive. So there's a point at which wealth becomes almost incomprehensible to those of us who don't have it. How on earth could anybody with the ability to make £5 million tomorrow say no? Well, easy. They can make £20 million next year. I still don't quite get it. I just take that, but that is, and I know a couple of callers or one caller has suggested it doesn't happen. And I'm sure it doesn't happen for small developers, but for the big developers, it just must, mustn't it? Benjamin is in King's Lynn, lovely part of the world. Benjamin, what would you like to say?
Oh, you know me, James. I'm always in when it comes down to anything agricultural, especially in this part of the world. I'm sort of going at this from the perspective of the self-build, the self-builder. So we're talking really small scale, usually one or maybe two properties. And to be honest, the majority of the time, it just tends to be about the land usage.
If there were thousands of you,
change that.
Yeah, so again, it's the rules that are in place making it too hard to do what you want to do and what everybody agrees should be easier to do.
Effectively. But the strange thing is, and this is something that I actually brought up with a colleague of mine, because they actually used to work in the local council's planning office.
Mm.
So they've had first-hand experience with this. And the majority of the time, if you get a large developer, they seemingly have these resources that will allow them to have the land changed from, typically from Greenland, so previously used for agriculture, to be able to use for dwellings, which is normally like a C3 or a C4 rating, as they would call it. But there's no actual legal path to do so from either a small scale or a self-build, it seems, because at that point you have to have the land effectively declared as, I believe the Latin is sui generis, which is just general land, and from that point,
what's happened to you?
To
just talk
make
me
a
through
application and argue to get the actual.
Talk me through what's happened to you. Because Steve Reed probably is going to rely more on the big companies to reach his 1.5 million than he is on people like you. But how hard has it been for you to build on land that you own?
I don't own any land at the moment, but I know that within a sort of 20-30 mile drive of me, there are hundreds of plots available, making up acres of land that's being sold by farmers through reputable sources, even through mainstream websites. But I've been on the self-build register with the local council and the nearby council since 2019, and I've had zero way forward because there's just no way for me to put through an application that will allow for me to, say, have some level of permission before I even purchase a plot of land. If I was to throw down a certain amount of money, then, so let's say the plot's $5,000, for example. Locally, I saw yesterday there is a plot that is a similar size that already has planning permission, and that's currently selling for a guide price of $75,000.
Yeah.
When the value of the land itself is set to be somewhere between 5,000 and 8,000. So just the cost of legal legwork.
Well, it's not just the cost of, it's the difference between something you're allowed to build on and something you're not. I may have misunderstood you, but you're sounding a little bit idealistic here, Benjamin. Is that you want to buy a place that hasn't got permission to be built on for a knockdown price and then get permission for it to be built on, in which case it would automatically be worth, with the examples you've just given us, 15 times more than what you paid for it?
That is what I've effectively been shown through using things like the self-build.
There's a reason why you haven't got a foot on this ladder, because you're dreaming the impossible.
Sure. No. I get that.
Maybe people have done it, but I tried not to interrupt you because I wasn't quite sure what you were talking about. But the bloke with the 75 grand plot of land has got permission to build on it, and you're trying to buy a place that hasn't got permission to build on it, and you seem to be puzzled about why one is worth infinitely more than the other, 15 times more than the other. I'm not puzzled. But yeah, okay, and if it was easier to get the permission, then the price of the plot that hasn't got permission would be higher as well. I mean, all of that, I'm always slightly wary of giving people a scolding when it comes to matters fiscal or economical, because it's not my strongest suit, but I've gone all in on this one. I wish you well, I really do, but I'm not quite sure that this is a reason why we have potentially not as many homes being built as we want, because if they made it easier to build on plots that don't currently have permission, then they would go up in value, and the problem that you've articulated to us would remain. Also, 75 grand for a plot with planning permission, when the property you'd build on it would be worth a multiple of that, sounds like quite good business, doesn't it? David's in Macclesfield. David, what have you got?
How are you doing, James?
I'm very well, David. What's on your mind?
Well, mine's coming from a different point of view. I own a parcel land which inherited from my dad, 18 acres of land, and I've had a series of developers wanting to tie me up in an option agreement, which I've now signed, and they pay me $40,000 a year, for every 4 years, over a 12-year period. But all their expenses come off the overall figure if it was to get me successful in getting planning permission for 200 houses.
Ah, okay. So they're paying you not to let anyone else have a look at the rabbit?
Exclusivity, that's all it is.
It's 12 o'clock on Friday. I've had a long week. What am I supposed to learn from this, David?
Good point. Well, if they get the planning permission, then the neighbours aren't going to be happy, obviously. But with that sort of figure, which I would receive, which would be quite substantial, it would be so much.
Was your dad a farmer?
My dad was a farmer, yeah.
He farmed it. You don't fancy farming it?
It's my granddad's as well.
And your granddad's as well, not indefinitely. So this is an example of... I mean, it's fascinating. How much are you going to make if it gets planning permission? Go on, don't be shy.
Well, they're saying it's $1 million an acre, because I don't know how many houses you get on an acre, but...
For you or for them? Or for all of it?
I would receive 18 million if they get the planning permission for the 200 houses.
You sound very relaxed about it.
I'm not, actually. It's a bit overwhelming. If they were to get the planning permission, I don't know what I'd do with that sort of money.
Well, I'd help you out, mate. Seriously, I wouldn't want you to go through it alone.
It could put some Kidderminster's way.
You could use a striker.
Anyway, good to speak to you.
Likewise, you take care as well. God, all human life is here. 12 noon. I thought we were going straight to the news then, because it was exactly 12 noon. But Keith, of course, has known me for long enough to know that I almost certainly had something else up my sleeve. Simon Marks on the way in the next hour. I've got one of my favourite full disclosure. Well, I've never done I've done one that I thought could have gone better, but I'm never going to tell you who it was. This week's is absolutely delightful, with someone that I have looked up to and admired from the earliest days of treading the boards at prep school, kind of actor who I just always, always admired on the grounds that I was never going to be anywhere near as good as them, and he was every bit as delightful a guest on Full Disclosure as you would expect. But up next, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. I get very cross about how some of the media covers the issue.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, polling experts say Labour is in severe trouble in Wales after Plaid Cymru won the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly. Lindsay Whittle won nearly half of the vote, ahead of Reform UK on 36% and Labour in a distant third on 11%. There was a record turnout of more than 50%. The Plaid leader, Rhun ap Iorwerth, has told LBC it's a momentous result.
There is a significant amount of anti-Labour sentiment out there. I've never felt anything quite like it on the doorstep. There was a very strong anti-reform sentiment, and I was very pleased that Caerphilly said no to that kind of politics. But everywhere you went, people were telling you they were voting Plaid for the first time, not begrudgingly, but because they believed in what we had to offer.
Rachel Reeves says it is her aim to keep taxes on working people as low as possible. It follows reports the Chancellor is considering increasing income tax in the budget next month. That would breach a key Labour manifesto pledge. Ms Reeves was asked to recommit to her promise by reporters this morning.
I absolutely recognise that the challenge that people have faced these last few years with double-digit inflation, energy bills going through the roof, and in the budget in November, of course, my aim is to ensure that we continue to support working people by keeping their taxes as low as possible.
President Zelensky is meeting the King at Windsor Castle ahead of talks with Keir Starmer. The Prime Minister is due to host leaders from the so-called Coalition of the Willing. He's expected to step up pressure on allies to provide Ukraine with more long-range missiles. The Home Office has announced an overhaul of the Windrush compensation scheme. Victims of the scandal, who were wrongly classified as illegal immigrants, will be paid up to 75% of their compensation in advance. Ministers say it's unacceptable many have been waiting so long for redress. Sheffield Wednesday have filed a notice to appoint administrators. They are currently bottom of the championship with just 6 points after 11 games and will receive an automatic penalty. The EFL had previously charged the club with multiple breaches of regulations. regulations after they failed to pay players on time. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 95.84. That is up 5 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places seeing some sunny spells and scattered showers this afternoon. Cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 12, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Donald Trump has called an immediate halt to all trade negotiations with Canada. And I wonder if you know why. And if you don't know why, I wonder if you can work out why from a selection of choices. Is it A, because Vladimir Putin told him to? So Donald Trump has cancelled all trade negotiations with Canada, called an immediate halt to them. And I want you to tell me why. Is it A, because Vladimir Putin told him to? Is it B, because there was an advertisement in Canada featuring the fellow Republican President Ronald Reagan railing against tariffs? In a speech from, I don't know, 1980, from the 1980s. So is it A, Putin? Is it B, Reagan? Or is it C, because he's playing golf? So Donald Trump has called an immediate halt to all of his negotiations on trade with Canada. And I want you to tell me whether it is, and that starts today. Is it A, because Vladimir Putin told him to? Is it B, because there was an advert in Canada playing the fellow Republican President Ronald Reagan slamming tariffs? And is it C, because he's playing golf? Simon Marks will be with us at 12:30 to have a look at that story and some others before he hops back on a jet plane and flies direct to Washington, D.C. tomorrow, which, I don't know, be quite a trepidatious journey, I imagine. But we turn our attention next to a story that is, it speaks to territory we're exploring quite a lot together at the moment. I don't know that we'll ever have satisfaction on this. I think of all of the years in which we've been pointing out the dangers of not properly standing up to politicians who pretend that immigration is the root of all our problems, and we're currently reaping what was sown by the decision of much of the media not to hold these people to account, to point out their obvious dishonesty and often racism, and allow their lies to travel halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on. Although not, it would appear, far enough to persuade the good people of Caerphilly to put their eggs in a bigoted basket overnight. But it's now people with mental health conditions. It's been amazing to watch it. There have been some alarms on the way, hasn't there? I think some of the things that Mel Stride said when he was the minister with responsibility for this sort of area just added to the idea that people are faking or lying or deliberately manufacturing mental health conditions, because obviously the rewards on our welfare system are so enormous. That's sarcasm, by the way. Who wouldn't? Amazing how susceptible some of us are to the whisper in the ear that him over there is getting something he doesn't deserve and he's lying in order to get it. You see it everywhere in society. It's always been there. It wasn't invented by tabloid media or radio shock jocks. But since Rupert Murdoch bought the Sun newspaper and began to exercise a stranglehold over the UK media, this othering of people who aren't actually foreign has been extraordinary. Single mothers. I mean, the stuff that was done on the single mothers front in the early days of Murdoch's ownership of the Sunday Times was absolutely hideous. Truly hideous. Daily Mail, of course, has always led the field on demonising foreigners, whether it was Jewish people travelling into this country from 1930s Germany or whether it was Eastern European people coming here to work in the run-up to the Brexit vote. If they were foreign, they were scum in the eyes of the Daily Mail, unless they were incredibly rich, in which case special dispensation could be given. But in the Murdoch media, they've always been better than the Mail at demonising people who are unquestionably indigenous and British, but who are also not very well, or enduring a little bit of bad luck, or not living by Victorian social standards. And I know all of that. I'm a student and a chronicler of it. Much of my last book was dedicated to pointing out how this happens. It's why it was called How They Broke Britain. You don't do something as stupid as Brexit without decades of grooming and gaslighting of a population to turn it into an atavistic, ill-informed, angry and ignorant mob, or at least 52%. But I've been surprised by this. I've been surprised by it. I've been surprised at how base the coverage of both special educational needs among children, as we touched on yesterday, and mental health in general among the adult population has been. How disgusting it has been. How the alacrity with which many people have taken up the invitation to accuse everybody of lying. Because it's always the same, isn't it, with these people? It's relevant, believe it or not, to the grooming gang story as well, which has been very hard to follow this week, because it has been so obviously turned into an attempt to score political points when you'd hope that everybody could agree the only priority here is delivering whatever it is the victims can agree on that they want. But a lot of people pushing on the grooming gangs inquiry are people who want every Muslim in the country, or everybody brown, or everybody of Pakistani origin to be somehow on the hook for the hideous crimes of some irredeemable scum. That's what it is about. It's why people try to set fire to hotels full of asylum seekers that have done absolutely nothing wrong, because some racists have told them that a terrible crime has been committed by an asylum seeker, even when it hasn't. Oh, and by the way, if you actually encourage people to go and set fire to hotels full of entirely innocent people because a racist has lied to you about a hideous crime being committed by somebody entirely different, then you are a political hero in the eyes of Nigel Farage and his mates. So the ease with which these two things happen, first the othering and then the conflation, it's hideous to watch. And it works. And I wish that it didn't, but we can't pretend that it doesn't. So you have somebody over here who quite possibly is receiving a benefit to which they're not completely entitled, and therefore it must be a pandemic of problems, and almost everybody is swinging the lead. The way that the motability story was covered earlier this year was an extraordinary combination of ignorance and bigotry. Absolutely breathtaking. The scratching of the statistical surface would have revealed that there was barely any story there at all. But the opportunity to attack people for getting something that you're not getting, in this case, mythical free cars, it's not even how the system works, was irresistible for a certain type of punter and a certain type of pundit. So, you approach the news that the number of 16 to 24-year-olds in England reporting symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder has more than tripled in a decade, knowing that some people will claim that it's all nonsense and we didn't call it that in my day. Some people will claim that it's just a question of, you know, pulling your socks up and giving your head a bit of a wobble. And some people, often the quietest voices, but not on this show, some people actually know what this story is about. OCD is not about washing your hands or getting your sock drawer in order. They may be very, very, very entry-level moments. OCD is about not being able to see a baby on a bus without thinking that you are going to sexually assault it. That level of intrusive thought is almost impossible to bear for people with, I don't want to say proper or full-on or anything like that, but for people with diagnosed obsessive-compulsive disorder. I did a phone-in on the radio. This is going to be the second part of the hour, because I don't know how bad it is to misuse the phrase. That's the second bit of the phone-in. Because we did stuff on this on the radio 100 years ago. we would use the phrase OCD to describe the fact that, for example, I really like the car radio to be on an even number when I set the volume. And we took calls from people who feel profoundly uncomfortable when the mugs on the hooks in the kitchen aren't all facing in the same way. And then I actually found out what OCD really is. And the best way to understand it is a malign voice in your head telling you things that you think must be true, even as you know they're not. And those voices, that voice cripples every area of your existence. So when you read that the number of 16 to 24-year-olds in England reporting symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder has more than tripled in a decade, the only correct response is sympathy and concern, compassion and curiosity, if not as to the why, but as to the what can we do about it. There are special hospital courses, and they are criminally underfunded and massively oversubscribed, where you might undertake something called aversion therapy, or at least I think it used to be called that, which means you are exposed to your worst nightmares in order to help you come to the realization that you don't actually have anything to be frightened of. But until you have achieved or reached that space, it's absolutely terrifying. And the shortage of expert staff and effective treatments is not a national scandal, because the scale of the problem has grown so quickly. But there's a national OCD centre in London where the waiting list at the moment is 41 weeks. And that's 41 weeks living in circumstances that I'm going to invite you to tell everybody else about in a moment, but which I can speculate a little on. It's living in circumstances that are absolutely unbearable. That example that I gave you is not out of the ordinary. It's a fairly common presentation when it comes to what the obsessive and compulsive element of the disorder might be. We always hear people using the phrase OCD, and we use it very innocuously ourselves. Oh, I'm a bit OCD about that. But the reality of living with it, believing things that are demonstrably untrue but life-limitingly important to the person suffering, is breathtaking. And then the behaviours that are sometimes responsible for the miscomprehensions are things that you do because they get rid of the intrusive or distressing thoughts. So it might involve self-harm, or it might involve repetitive behaviour. Washing, I mean, is on the page here, but it's not being done because, oh, I'm worried I'm not clean enough. It's being done to get the horrible thoughts out of your head. It's a ritualistic observance. Sometimes hygiene and cleanliness will be part of your OCD, but generally speaking, as I understand it, and you know how these phone-ins work, you are not just welcome, but positively encouraged to tell me about your experiences. You are doing things over and over and over again, because if you don't do them, the really terrible things will happen. And the level of panic, of anxiety that these people feel, in this case 16 to 24-year-olds, but my phone lines are open for everybody, is something that I think we owe it to them, and in fact to ourselves, to come to a better understanding of. So it's funny, isn't it, that the two biggest areas of mental health disorders are generalized anxiety disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder. And because they are, to a certain degree, both invisible, they are easy to dismiss. But my goodness me, if your head is full of this stuff, if your brain is full of this stuff, then the single worst thing anybody can do is pretend that it's easy to overcome, or that they actually have some knowledge of it because they once had to tie their shoelaces in a certain way, otherwise they were convinced they were going to fall through the cracks in the pavement, but a month later I was fine again. It's the single most ridiculous contribution to the conversation. What's it like? Explain it to somebody who just doesn't know. 0345 6060 973. And what's it like to watch someone with it? What's it like to watch someone you love with it? And to go on that crash course of understanding, to go from thinking, well, it's just about washing your hands, isn't it, or getting all your ducks in a row. Well, it's just about having an even number on the car. Oh, my God, it's not that at all. First place, to you, as someone who lives with it. Second place, to you, as someone who lives with somebody who lives with it. And third place, to everybody in either of those categories. So just a pet subject, this. Does it matter when people use the phrase flippantly? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I don't do it myself anymore. But I don't know whether we should be getting cross with people who do. Does it contribute to the misunderstanding and to the ignorance when somebody says, oh, crikey, if I don't get the 7:38 every morning, my OCD kicks in? It doesn't at all. You just feel mildly discombobulated. I don't know if you're going to be as interested in this part of the question as I am, but I'm constantly trying to work out where the parameters of good behaviour are and causing unnecessary upset and unnecessary offence. I'm a big fan of causing necessary offence, you know I am, but unnecessary offence. When people use the OCD as shorthand for being a little bit anal or being having quite a high attention to detail, does that really boil your blood? Or does it actually not matter at all? I categorically can't come to a proper conclusion about that. And of course, you may tell me, some of you will say it matters and some of you will say it doesn't. I won't be any closer to coming to a conclusion at 1 o'clock today than I am now. But hey-ho, let's suck it and see. It's 12:19.
LBC.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18+ UK residents. Available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
21 minutes after 12. Is it one of the most misused and misunderstood phrases in modern English? OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Let's work out what it actually is, okay, and what it's like to live with it. And I can tell from my inbox and from my switchboard that this is something of a dam breaking, prompted by news today that the numbers of diagnoses, which is, you know, even getting, or at least the reports of symptoms, have more than tripled in the last decade. Something else that will no doubt have some of its roots in lockdown and COVID, but which all authorities seem to have sort of blithely moved on from, even as people have to continue living with the consequences. Terry's in Norwich. Terry, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, Terry.
Excellent. Okay, brilliant. Yeah, I've lived with OCD for my whole life. I got diagnosed, so I'm 31 years old now.
Yeah.
I got diagnosed, I went and got my formal diagnosis at about 22, 23. I put it off for a long time, but I knew it was there, if you know what I mean.
I think I do. Why did you put it off?
I put it off because I just knew it was a given, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course
it does. I knew that I had it. My mum's got it as well.
Okay.
My dad's got Tourette's, and I've got what is called Tourette's OCD, so it's a slightly different format.
With tics. Imagine,
yeah, with tics, verbal tics. Stims, you know, that kind of stuff, okay. Physical tics as well.
And I guess part of the not wanting or thinking there was any point getting a diagnosis is you didn't know that it would make any difference to what you were already living with.
Absolutely. Okay. And I also just, I sounds kind of stupid, but I just knew it. I knew what it was.
Okay, doesn't
it was
sound
very
stupid
obvious
at all.
To me.
Doesn't sound stupid at all, mate.
But I just want to kind of, say congratulate you almost. But this is the first time I've heard it spoken about on radio. The first time that I've heard it come up in conversation for a long, long time. It's not a very talked about thing, OCD.
No.
And when it is talked about, it's talked about in a very stigmatised way.
Well, it's
in a very stereotypical way.
It's a phrase we hear a lot. But often when we hear that phrase, we're not talking about what you're living with, not by any stretch of the imagination. Someone says, "Oh, that's OCD," or "I'm OCD." I mean, how unhelpful is that? Do you think that misuse?
For me personally, I'm at a point where I'm so used to hearing it that I just kind of I used to get really annoyed by it. Really, really used to, you know, grate on me. But and I will correct people sometimes, but I don't. I can understand for someone maybe, or some other people, you know, and someone else who's kind of freshly diagnosed, it might really be grating.
Yeah.
But I just think we need to raise more awareness, like talking about it on the radio, for example, of what it actually is. So,
well, go on then. The floor is yours, Terry.
Absolutely. I mean, like you mentioned, intrusive thoughts is one part of it. They can be pretty horrible, like you said earlier about seeing a little girl on a bus, for example.
Yeah.
That's a very valid example. That's a horrible example, but it's a that's a very true, transparent example of what it's like.
And it's not. It's not just for the avoidance of doubt for anyone who's just tuning in. It's not framing a desire to do anything. It's a terrible fear. It's a terrible fear that you already have, or that you somehow will, despite the fact that it repels every fibre of your being, the very thought of it. That's what an intrusive thought does. It doesn't have to make sense to be crippling.
It disgusts you. That's the problem with it, is because it's so against your principles, you know, and your ethics and things like that. It's something that you would never do. And it's basically what it is, in my experience, is your brain saying, here we go. Here's the worst thing you could possibly think right now. I've been to funerals and I've thought about having sexual interactions with the person who's died, be that my grandma, be that someone else I know. And that is like, you know, you have to just tell yourself in that moment, this isn't me thinking this. This is my brain trying to come up with the worst possible thing that I could think right now. It's almost like a challenge. It's like, here you go. Here's something awful.
Yeah.
You know, cope with that. And that's just one part of it. Like you said, there's, you know, the more well-known things that people, the surface-level things, washing your hands and organising things, they're actually very legitimate parts of it as well.
Of course.
My hands are always cracked and dry from I don't have contamination OCD.
No.
That's a completely different kind of thing, you know, where some people are completely bed-bound, house-bound by contamination OCD, where they can't go out and a fear of germs and things like that. But, you know, my hands are completely cracked and often, you know, to the point that they're slightly bleeding from just washing my hands all the time.
And do you do the rituals in order to quieten the voices?
Yeah, because this is the problem with OCD, that it's so hard to voice it without you feel very much like people are going to think you're slightly nuts.
Yeah,
because,
you
know, if I say to you, I can't go to bed without wiggling the door 15 times, and if I don't do it right, or if it doesn't feel right, then in my head that's going to ruin my whole next day. Or worse, you know, when I was younger, it was things like, if I don't do this, for example, you know, let's say I don't adjust the tea towel so it's hanging perfectly on each side, so it's perfectly distributed, then my mum's going to die on the way home from work. It sounds completely bonkers.
But you absolutely believe it. You absolutely believe it.
You absolutely do. I'm a 31-year-old man, and I believe, you know, in those moments, I believe it, and I have to do it, and it's such a hard thing to break. I mean, I go a couple of days, and I think, okay, I'm going to make this. I'm going to really make an effort not to do my compulsions today. I'm really going to make an effort, so I'm not going to adjust the way that I've put my AirPod case down, for example, and I'm just going to ignore it. But then you just get that niggling feeling in the back of your head, and it's like a shoot of anxiety, and it is such a hard thing to break. And like I say, I'm a 31-year-old man, and I know better than to think that these things are going to happen as a result of that. But there's that what if, and if you don't do it, there's always going to be that what if. So it's a complicated thing.
What helps?
Nothing for me. I'm on I'm on antidepressants at the moment because there is, this is another issue. There's not really a medication suitable for OCD. So they just give you SSRIs, which are, you know, serotonin reuptake.
They can make it worse in some cases. I don't think they are in yours, but you need to be careful.
They can. And you know, and also it's, yeah, there's just not, there's not really, I don't think there's enough understanding around it. You know, it seems very closely related to autism, in my opinion.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I've probably said enough, and it's probably best if you get some more people just to have
You've done a lovely job. You're producing the show now, Terry. You've only been on for 5 minutes. You've done a cracking job.
I just want you to get as many people, because I'm just so pleased that you're talking
about
it.
Well, I'll tell you what, because I've got a couple of things already in the diary for today, but we will come back to this as well sooner rather than later, and I will think of you when we do, because already a lot of people are expressing enormous gratitude to you for opening up the conversation so completely, and some of the messages I'm getting now I wouldn't be getting if you hadn't done such a cracking job. I'm sorry that you're struggling in the way that you are and haven't found more help or better treatment. I have been plagued by OCD, mostly pure O, which is the sort of argo of the condition, since I was 13, but I didn't know what it was until I was 30. Writes, I'll just check, we haven't got a request not to use the name. Yes, this is from Jenny. I'm 42 now. I figured I was just a bad person. It manifests in the areas of my life I care about the most. When I was pregnant, I was hospitalized because I was convinced I was going to harm my unborn child. These were POCD thoughts, or paedophilia OCD, which killed me inside for a long time as the thoughts continued for years, and I have 3 children, so it haunted me every day. I had been fobbed off as just being anxious by doctors who don't understand it and make you feel shame in talking about it. I only understood what it was when I read a book called The Imp of the Mind, which I urge anyone suffering to read, and it is so relatable. Also, Because We Are Bad by Lily Bailey, who is also very active online. I manage it with SSRIs. It's the absolute worst thing you can experience. Your mind never shuts off. It has made me suicidal in the past when I truly believed I was that person. Thankfully, now I know I'm not. And there you go. Just 2 contributors, and already completely exploded the idea that this is just about people who, I feel a little bit uncomfortable. And hey, guilty as charged. Used to do it. Did phone-ins about it. Just to sort of, let's be kind and just call it ignorance as opposed to anything more malign. A timely moment perhaps to give you the number for the Samaritans if you find yourself in situations like Jenny, but 116123. There's always somebody there to talk to, but I've got Simon waiting to talk to us about events in the United States, and we will be returning to this after that. Time now is 12:31, and Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Volodymyr Zelensky has received a ceremonial welcome at Windsor Castle during his visit to the UK. He shook hands with King Charles and was given a royal salute at the castle's quadrangle earlier. Plaid Cymru have taken the Senate seat of Caerphilly, an area dominated by Labour for 100 years. The new MS, Lindsay Whittle, won 47% of the vote ahead of Reform UK on 36% and Labour on just 11%. And Rachel Reeves says she's aiming to keep taxes on working people as low as possible. The Chancellor is reportedly considering increasing income tax in the budget next month. LBC weather, cloudy in the north with outbreaks of rain and showers, brighter for the southeast with some blustery showers in the southwest, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios,
practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
12:34 is the time. There's a brilliant piece in the Financial Times today, which is, I think but if you print it out, it covers about 10 or 11 pages of A4. And it looks at the so-called Trump supremacy. Edward Luce, brilliant writer, looking at the disarray among opponents. All of the things, in fact, which was my abiding thought as I read it, that Simon Marks keeps us abreast of on an increasingly regular basis. And it also makes the point that one of the problems is keeping up. So expect to hear a lot more from Simon Marks in the coming weeks on this programme as he prepares to return to the front line in Washington, D.C., because you have to try. And I think for a while we stopped trying. We just felt overwhelmed by events in the United States of America as things take an ever darker turn. So we have to try to keep up with things. I wonder what is in the in-tray today. Let's start with that question I asked you a moment ago. Why has Donald Trump immediately called an immediate halt to all negotiations with Canada? Is it A, because Vladimir Putin told him to? Is it B, because he didn't like an advert featuring Ronald Reagan that was being broadcast in Canada? Or is it C, because he couldn't commit to any negotiations due to his golfing commitments? Here's your answer.
When someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. But over the long run, such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. Then the worst happens.
And he's really taken his toys home as a consequence of that advert.
Absolutely. But the important thing to underscore here, there's so many things about this. First of all, that was Ronald Reagan speaking in one of his weekly radio addresses. You remember back in the day, the president every weekend would record a radio address and it would go out to the country. There are several of those weekly addresses by Ronald Reagan in which he expresses similar hostility to protectionism and advocates for free trade. That ad has been produced in Canada by the provincial government of Ontario. It's airing across American states that border Ontario. This is an initiative taken by the Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, who has been a persistent critic of Donald Trump, and who has also pointed out that were Ontario to turn off its power exports to the United States, literally flick the switch and turn them off, Michigan, Minnesota, and New York City would go dark. And this is, of course, a representation of the fact that Doug Ford, and more broadly the national Canadian government, says that when Donald Trump continues to diminish Canada as a trading partner, it's literally Ontario that is keeping the lights on in Manhattan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this ad is now airing and has completely stuck in Donald Trump's craw. And just what, 10 days after Mark Carney was last at the White House, trying to romance Donald Trump and,
so this has nothing to do with Carney.
Nothing to do with Carney. This has all been placed by Doug Ford.
What a mess.
So now, Trump is cancelling, he says, in a fit of pique, all trade negotiations with Mark Carney and with the national federal government of Canada because he doesn't like a TV ad that Doug Ford has booked.
Hurty words. perhaps, is what we call it. What do you think will happen? Do you think Carney will ask Ford to pull it so that they can reopen?
I think we'll move on to another fit of pique about something else, and by next week they'll be back to having more trade conversations. I don't think so many of these paroxysms of fury are temporary. And one of the difficulties, and it's something that Ed Luce writes brilliantly about in that article that you were talking about, is just following the ball and trying to figure out if there is any rationale to anything. I mean, where we are at the end of this week vis-a-vis Ukraine is not where we thought we would be at the end of the last week. We see U-turn after U-turn after U-turn. And yet, as Ed Luce absolutely points out in the thrust of that article, not on the central proposition of Donald Trump's government, which is the constant expansion of his own power, an authoritarian executive, a presidency that is not constrained in any way, shape or form, and that is steamrolling the constitutional checks and balances that supposedly were going to defend democracy in the United States and that are largely falling by the wayside.
How well is that being reported, do you think? I mean, among your colleagues in the US media, some of whom are cowed, some of whom have actually bent the knee, but some of whom must still be doing their level best to chronicle the extent of the assault upon the norms, the democratic norms.
Yes, I mean, I do think it is extraordinary that it falls to people like Ed Luce, the Financial Times correspondent in Washington, D.C., and a host of other...
For my listeners.
Well, that's very nice of you, but, I mean, there are others, you know, James Matthews at Sky News, for example, who has chased down Kash Patel, the director of the FBI, at, I think, considerable risk to himself, you know, and demanded to know whether Kash Patel had put public safety at risk recently when, in response to the killing of Charlie Kirk, he claimed a suspect was in custody when a suspect was not in custody. The traditional kind of watchdog role is not really being fulfilled by many American journalists. If you look at the New York Times yesterday, you had to get to the 15th paragraph of the New York Times article about the tearing down of the East Wing of the White House before you learnt that this had been done without any permission, without any oversight, without any accountability by the National Trust for Historic Preservation or the National Park Service. The 15th paragraph. I mean, they were lucky they squeezed it in. And that's just astonishing.
And these organizations, these heritage organizations, have expressed profound horror at what is going on, and that story changes daily as well. Not most obviously with the cost.
Yeah, we're now up to three. Since I was just thinking on the way here, since the last time I sat in this
chair.
Which 2 days ago, it's gone up by another 50 million. Now it's a 300 million, could go even higher. They have.
The money's all private, it's all coming from mysterious sources.
Well, less mysterious now, because under pressure, they put out a list of donors last night who include many of the obvious characters: Amazon, Jeff Bezos, of course, Apple, Google, HP, Microsoft. An awful lot of crypto money going into this. Coinbase, Ripple, the Winklevoss twins putting money in. The Glazer family, part owners of Manchester United.
Very fondly looked upon in Manchester.
So, you know, this money is pouring in. Former White House chief ethics lawyer calls the undertaking an ethics nightmare because, of course, we know who these people are now, some of them, whether we ever find out exactly how much money they've all given and whether there is a true complete list that is released at some point in the future, we'll have to see. But we have no idea what they've got in return for this, except, of course, Donald Trump's imprimatur and thanks. And clearly, they are buying access to the president by putting this kind of money up. At a time, James, when we are into the 24th, or is it the 25th day, of the government shutdown, and federal government workers in Washington, D.C. are reported now to be going to food banks because they're not being paid and they haven't got enough money to go to the supermarket this week to buy provisions for their household. Government civil servants finding themselves going to food banks because of a government shutdown while the president is sitting there holding up pictures of this Versailles-like golden ballroom.
Oh, it's much more vulgar than, much more vulgar than Versailles. And briefly, remind us how the lockdown ends.
Well, the shutdown only ends if there's a political compromise that can be forged between Republicans and Democrats. They tried again yesterday. They failed. There's no indication that either side is completely ready to blink. There are certainly some waverers on both sides that are getting nervous about all of this. But, you know, we're 24, 25 days into this. In a week's time, we'll be at a full month. And there is currently no end in sight.
And again, to clarify, when the ballroom is finished and people pay, I don't know, $100,000 or $1 million to attend functions in the way that they do at Mar-a-Lago, even Donald Trump will probably balk at trying to put the money directly into his own pockets, but it will make its way into the presidential library or the campaign fund or whatever.
I mean, I think that may be true, particularly about Mar-a-Lago. Whether that's true about this ballroom or not, I think we'll have to see exactly how it pans out, because it's not even clear how operational it's going to be during Donald Trump's period in office. Now, you could argue, as many people do, that if you were planning to leave the White House in 2028, you probably wouldn't commission a ballroom that might not be completely finished by then, although the rapidity with which they have torn down the east wing of the White House...
It is breathtaking.
I mean,
to think of it as one of the few buildings in the world that most people... the Taj Mahal...
Yeah.
Probably not Buckingham Palace, because it always looks less impressive. Windsor Castle, Taj Mahal, White House, buildings that a significant number of people on the planet would recognise in a photo lineup. It's been completely, one side of it has been completely razed to the ground.
And out of nowhere. If we'd sat here a week ago and you'd said to me, I'll tell you what, Simon, next week he's going to tear down the east wing of the White House.
I don't play that game anymore.
But this has now got a fast track beneath it that is speeding this construction project towards completion. He's absolutely determined to do it. He's determined that it should be used as a convening location for foreign dignitaries and their entourages be entertained when they are at the White House. But clearly, there are all sorts of other possible uses to which it could one day be put.
We watch with interest. And then we come to one of the few areas of consistency in Donald Trump's modus operandi, which is vengeance against people who have slighted him or pursued him in the past. We know John Bolton has been indicted. We know that James Comey. Letitia James, I think, is in court this week, in court today, possibly. What's that story about?
Yes,
she's the New York Attorney General.
She's the Attorney General who pursued the conspiracy charges against the Trump Organization. Remember the court case that found that Donald Trump had overinflated the value of his assets in order to attract loans on favorable terms from financial institutions. She is now facing what is without doubt retribution at the hands of Donald Trump. She's facing accusations of alleged mortgage fraud. According to the prosecution that she's facing, she purchased a second property, describing it as a second home to get an advantageous mortgage rate, but then used it as an investment property, which breaches the rules and might have saved her about $18,000 over the life of the mortgage. Now, she insists she did nothing wrong. The courts, of course, will now make that determination. And, you know, mortgage fraud is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also absolutely apparent that what Donald Trump is doing is using his personally selected head of the housing regulator in Washington to look under the bonnet of all of these different people that have wronged him. So we've seen exactly the same kind of allegations being leveled against Lisa Cook, like Letitia James, also an African-American woman who sits on the Federal Reserve Committee. And she's being accused of mortgage fraud as well. So there's no question that this housing regulator is being used as an office of political retribution by the president as he goes after his opponents, in exactly the same way as the FBI, the Department of Justice, are now completely politicized tools of retribution, because what he's done is pierced the traditional independence of the Department of Justice. And it's really important to underscore the independence of the Department of Justice turns out to be traditional, not constitutionally protected, very much like the White House. Traditionally, you're supposed to go and ask permission to tear down the East Wing, but if you're a cultural vandal and you actually just tear it down and don't seek that permission, it turns out it's not legally required.
I have some details since we've come on air. of how Donald Trump has responded, or his latest contribution to the Canada story, which you began your bulletin today. Would you like to hear it?
I'd love to.
So the first five letters are in capital letters. Canada cheated and got caught, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. They fraudulently took a big buy ad saying that Ronald Reagan did not like tariffs when actually he, capital letters, loved tariffs for our country and its national security. New sentence. Canada is trying to illegally influence the United States Supreme Court in one of the most important rulings in the history of our country. Canada has long cheated on tariffs, charging our farmers as much as 400%. Now they and other countries can't take advantage of the U.S. any longer. Thank you to the Ronald Reagan Foundation for exposing this, capital letters, fraud. Make America great again, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Yeah, they're claiming selective use of the clip, but
there's
loads
of them.
There are multiple presidential addresses in which Ronald Reagan articulated very, very similar viewpoints. I do think that he's very concerned about that Supreme Court case, because if the Supreme Court rules that his tariffs were unconstitutional, that is going to rip the guts out of not just
because
his trade policy, but his foreign policy too.
Because he's done everything he can to rig the Supreme Court during his first term and subsequently. So if they actually find enough vertebrae to say, not this one, champ,
it would be very problematic for him.
Which is why we'll be talking to you soon. Bon voyage.
Thank you very much.
Safe travels.
Thanks a lot.
And
nice
stay safe.
You. I will do the best I can.
It's 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The jubilation of general election night has been rubbed out by the Caerphilly by-election trouncing. Can the government change its fortunes by improving yours?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalised to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behaviour. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire your pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
TRIP. Think, do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:51, and it's one of those conversations that has been a little bit too squeezed, so I don't think I will need reminding, but in case I do, remind me to return to this specific conversation about OCD and the exponential rise in symptoms and the importance of understanding the reality of the condition sooner rather than later. But meanwhile, Sarah is in Sevenoaks. Sarah, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Great to talk to you again. It's been a while. So I was diagnosed when I was 14. I'm 40 now. And OCD, okay, so this is my take on OCD. Yeah. It is making you feel absolutely disgusted at yourself, like you're the most evil person in the world, you don't deserve to live, and your life will never be good. Okay, so that's how I felt in my teens, early 20s. And I still, you know, get intrusive, horrible intrusive thoughts now, but I've learned to accept that I'm going to have them.
Okay.
There was a great podcast by Robin Ince on the BBC.
I love Robin.
And, he's such a nice guy. I've met him so many times. He's lovely. And he explained, well, sometimes these intrusive thoughts, they're telling you not to not do them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like your brain's wired to... So that really helped me, listening to him. Educating myself on OCD. I mean, I've got Tourette's, ADHD, PMDD, everything linked to anxiety.
Yes.
I've pretty much got, and it does make my life hellish, but it's improved so much. And
that's good to hear.
I really want people to know that, but the worst of the OCD is just making you feel like the worst person in the world, James.
Because you're persuading yourself that you want to do awful things.
Yeah, but you don't.
And you know you don't.
That's the thing.
So this is the bit that I think, I put this quite carefully, but you probably, I can never quite get that bit, can I? That juxtaposition of thinking that you want to do something awful while knowing that you don't.
I don't think unless you have been OCD, you can never get it. You can try and understand it, but you can never get it, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. But it's important to try to understand it. And
yeah,
the harder you try, the closer you get to it, and the less likely you are then to engage in either ignorance or really unhelpful contributions. What are your personal feelings about people who use the phrase OCD in a throwabout, in a knockabout way?
Yeah, I kind of get it.
Yeah.
You know, people
I do.
Have terms, don't they, that they think are cool and trendy. It's really stupid. But an example is when, was it Victoria Beckham was saying that David Beckham likes his cans in the kitchen cupboard to be facing the right way.
Mm.
Oh, it's a bit OCD. It's not. It's just being a bit, you know, fussy.
Well done, yes. I was thinking of a less very fussy.
You know, wanting things neat and a bit tidy, maybe.
And there might be a mild discombobulation, I don't know about Beckham, actually. I think maybe that wasn't a helpful comment by his wife, but I think some of the stuff he talked about in his own documentary may have actually gone a little bit closer to the reality. I don't know whether he's got a diagnosis or not, but I think he did. He's a good egg, Beckham, and I know you weren't
good.
Suggesting otherwise for a minute.
No, not at all.
I like that. I'm glad you were on last today, because you actually, I hope you realise that you sound hopeful. You provide hope to people
Definitely.
Who are getting in touch.
And I saw the film I Swear, and that made me bawl my eyes out, because it educated me about myself and how my Tourette's, ADHD are all interlinked with OCD. And I didn't know, James, and I'm 40.
Gosh.
And I'm still learning.
I'm
so
trying to get John on, I want to get John Davidson on Full Disclosure.
Oh, please do. That would be amazing.
We've sent out feelers. That is, for people who haven't seen that film, it is absolutely magnificent. And if people like Sarah are going to learn from it, then imagine what the rest of us are going to do. This is nice from Blazesh, who says, I'm a therapist specialising in OCD, especially the pure O. Thank you for choosing this subject today. Please encourage your listeners to seek help, to look for good and experienced therapists who specialise in it. There's nothing we haven't heard before. You won't be judged, and you will have nothing to lose by trying. Well, except, and I'm only saying this as a sort of detail, obsessive, access, it's really hard to find good people, and it is even harder to do so on the NHS. But if you can find someone good, then do, because people like Blazesh are doing important work. Okay, little clip now from this week's Full Disclosure, where I got to sit down with Charles Dance, who it turned out is a listener to the programme. So while I should be introducing a little clip of Charles Dance, instead, I'm going to tell you that this week's Full Disclosure is with Charlie from Kentish Town.
I was quite good at telling stories. I don't remember any of the stories I told, but I do remember arriving at a point when I had begun to develop a stammer, and I thought, I can't tell stories anymore.
So it was about 13 when that happened, 13,
yeah.
14.
Yeah.
And do we know why? Do we have any idea why? Because your mum was poorly, wasn't she? Your mum had a pretty bad breakdown before that.
She did. maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, she took me to a speech therapist.
Right.
And physically there was nothing wrong. But that's the way my adolescence manifested itself.
Oh, of course.
You know, with some people, it's acne or badly behaved, you know, and it's a difficult time for those of us going through it and those of us near people going through it.
And it means you can't, I mean, you certainly can't interact as much as you would have liked to do.
No, I used to make up the most complicated sentences to get round words I couldn't manage.
Oh, how interesting.
I didn't want to be seen to be a stammerer. Gradually, by about 18, words that I had problems with, suddenly I could say. So I could then also perhaps talk to a girl.
Well, that's got to be a big development.
Yes, it disappeared slowly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that must be quite torturous, though, because you're terrified constantly that it's going to come back.
Oh, yes. And very, very rarely, but there are occasions when, I don't know what it is, but I was doing, the last time it happened, I was doing Shadowlands, sobbing my guts up, 8 shows a week for 6 months, you know. And there was one of those nights, and the thing about working in the theatre, if you get 5 nights out of 8 that are good,
yes,
that's pretty good going, okay?
Yeah.
The 3 that are not so good, hopefully, well, probably the audience won't notice, but we notice it.
Right.
Whether the timing just goes off slightly. And there was one night, and I started to say a sentence, and there was a sound coming up, and I just had to stop. And I just breathed for a bit, and then it was fine. But the terror, yes, I thought, oh, my God. I mean, it is a terrible affliction.
Yes. So much ground covered in that. Can you tell when I like a guest even more than usual when you're listening to Full Disclosure? You've never told me. But if you can, then you'll
Yes, you can.
Okay, because on that one, you really will be able to. I was in the palm of his hand.
But that's nice to hear. It's not a bad thing.
No, I completely agree. Do you know that his father was much older than his mother? And he was so old, his father. He lost him when he was 5. We talk about this. His dad fought in the Boer War.
God, that is extraordinary history to have in your hands, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just one element of his life story that I found absolutely riveting. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Stay up to date on all the top stories. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including Full Disclosure this week with the brilliant Charles Dance. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, Asma is in for Tom Swarbrick again, but now it is time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. I know that we've spoken quite a lot today on LBC, or you have, about OCD. But I think it behoves us to return to the topic. 16 to 24-year-olds with OCD tripling, the numbers tripling in a decade, and that's the ones getting help and on record, so it's bound to be more than that and isn't very well understood. So let's talk about that more at 3. At 2, you might have noticed Keir Starmer has written for the LBC app about digital ID cards. He really wants you to agree that they're a very good thing indeed and will give you back control of your life. I'm persuadable on these ID cards. Are you, though? Are you persuadable? But I'm going to start with the aftermath of the Caerphilly by-election trouncing. How does the government change its fortunes if it doesn't change ours?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Volodymyr Zelensky has received his first ceremonial welcome to the UK. The Ukrainian president shook hands with King Charles at Windsor Castle's quadrangle and was also given a royal salute. The visit comes ahead of his meeting with the Prime Minister and other leaders for talks on how to increase pressure on Moscow. Former UN Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson has told LBC the show of unity is important in the face of mixed signals from the US.
Of course, Europe, the European Union, together with Great Britain, which has played quite an important role in Ukraine, has an obligation to help Ukraine maintain their sovereignty and territorial integrity. I think to show that commitment is an important signal to Moscow in a time when these signals from Trump are so difficult to interpret.
Labour has admitted it has a very tough fight on its hands after finishing third in the Caerphilly by-election in the Senedd. Lindsay Whittle from Plaid Cymru won almost half of the vote, also beating Reform. Anne Davies is Plaid MP for Caerphilly. LBC put to her that following next year's election, it might be that no party has a majority in the Senedd.
There's a lot of work that has to be done before that. And the work really starts now in persuading and ensuring and making sure that people understand that Plaid is ready to work for with the people of Wales and take that responsibility for on behalf of the people of Wales.
Rachel Reeves says aims to keep taxes on working people as low as possible following reports she could put up income tax in the budget. That would breach a key Labour manifesto pledge. Figures shared with LBC show more than 50,000 bicycle thefts went unsolved in England and Wales last year. The data put together by the Liberal Democrats show just 2% of investigations result in a charge. The Home Office says 3,000 new police officers are being put on the streets to tackle crimes like bike theft. And financially troubled Championship club Sheffield Wednesday have filed for administration. The EFL's already hit them with sanctions for not paying players and staff on time. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was unchanged at 95.78. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy in the north with outbreaks of rain and showers. Brighter for the southeast with some blustery showers in the southwest. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Why am I leaving a gift in my will to Cancer Research UK? When my wife Sue was diagnosed with cancer, she was given 6 months to live. But thanks to radiotherapy, we had 10 more years together and she saw our daughter get married. We now know her cancer is hereditary. So I need to do everything I can to help my family, even when I'm not here.
Gifts in Wills fund a third of our work helping us develop life-changing cancer research. Visit cruk.org/giftsinwills. Together we are beating cancer.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We are determined, says Keir Starmer, to deliver, through his spokesperson, to deliver the change that we promised hand in hand with the Labour government in Wales. Well, let's see how that goes in time, not just in Wales, but for the rest of us as well. That defeat overnight in Caerphilly, a real trouncing. 11% of the vote is all Labour could muster in a place that is historically very Labour friendly. They will be looking very closely at these figures and at what people on the doorstep were saying to their various candidates and canvassers. But it's all part of a pattern at the moment, isn't it, really? Not of by-elections, we haven't had that many, but a pattern of a lack of satisfaction at the very least, anger even, at what the Labour government has presented to us since it won the election. It's not universal anger, of course, but there's enough of it for it to be a problem. The opinion polls tell us that. The polls about voting intentions, the polls about Keir Starmer, what they think of his performance so far. We'll get more on Caerphilly in about half an hour with Aggie Shombre, LBC's political correspondent. But we learned today as well that the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is mulling a rise in income tax to fill that black hole, so-called, within Britain's finances, totalling more than £30 billion. You will remember, because we've talked about it a lot during the election and since, that commitment not to raise income tax in this Parliament, not to raise VAT, not to raise national insurance for employees. People assumed that included employers at one point, but it turned out not to. Three sources close to the process of the budget, you know, you ask various ministers about the budget now and they just say, I'm not the Chancellor, I can't say anything. So we don't really know precisely what's going on. But sources close to the process have told the Guardian newspaper that Rachel Reeves is in active discussions to raise the rate of income tax. And my question to you around Labour generally, but specifically since that defeat in Caerphilly overnight, is what do they have to do to turn around their fortunes? I mean, it seems to me that the answer is they need to turn around our fortunes to turn around their fortunes. And that will feel different to everybody, won't it? We're all individuals. For some of you, it will be because childcare is now affordable. For some of you, it will be because you've got that health appointment you've been waiting for. For others, it will be that job that you've been trying to get back into and you've got the support from the DWP maybe. And it'll be different for everybody. A sense that government is working for you. And there's clearly, when we look at opinion polls about people's sense of trust in politicians, it's low. In politicians and politics, it's low. It's why people are pivoting to parties that are either new or historically not that successful in general elections. So what do you say, both for you and generally, what do you say that the government needs to do to improve its fortunes? Because it's got to be more than communications, hasn't it? They have been very bad at communicating their policy ideas and their reasons for making the choices that they make. It simply isn't enough just to complain about the previous lot as an answer. But it seems to me it's about more than communications. It's very much about you feeling that they are delivering for you. So what would that look like? It's what Keir Starmer has recommitted to today. What would that look like for you? 0345 6060973. And if income tax does go up in the budget, and we don't know yet, it'll be late November before we know. If that decision is made, will you have respect for the Chancellor for turning her back on that commitment? Or will that be it for you? 0345 6060973. Will you think more or less of the government if they make that decision? 84850, the number to text. Patrick Diamond joins me, co-author of the 2005 and 2010 manifestos and former policy advisor to Tony Blair and Gordon Brown when they were prime ministers, now professor in public policy at Queen Mary University in London. Good afternoon to you, Patrick.
Oh, good afternoon, Sheila.
That election result overnight, I mean, it's not unusual for incumbent governments to get a kicking in a by-election, but this does feel part